credentials at lbc.co.uk. Shabana Mahmood tomorrow. That's it for today. James O'Brien's waiting the other side of the news, of course. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and somebody sent me a little compilation this weekend of people in British politics and media using that dread phrase, Trump derangement syndrome, as a pejorative. And the remarkable thing was they were all in favour of Brexit. They were all fans of Boris Johnson. They were all cheerleaders now for Nigel Farage. They've all been part of the demonising of refugees and the general othering of people born overseas. And they're all, once again, categorically and completely wrong about the threat that the President of the United States posed to democracy, decency. You can add whatever words you want there. So as the fascist project gathers pace and the murder of civilians becomes ever more commonplace, what the hell do we do?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, President Trump says his administration is reviewing everything connected to the killing of Alex Preti in Minneapolis. The 37-year-old was shot and killed by federal immigration agents on Saturday. Border officials insist they acted in self-defense, but local authorities question the threat he posed. Thousands of people have marched through Minneapolis overnight. These people say they've had enough.
I'm feeling anger. I'm feeling tired. I'm feeling unsafe. And I'm feeling confused because it's all so senseless. Mm-hmm. It's all so senseless.
How much is enough? Mm-hmm. How many more people have to die?
The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, is to promise to make police respond quicker to 999 calls. Forces will be required to respond to emergencies within 20 minutes in England and Wales. It's part of a wider overhaul to policing, which will be outlined this afternoon. Cabinet ministers have been defending the move to block Andy Burnham from standing in an upcoming by-election. He was stopped on the basis of an expensive race to replace him, potentially, as mayor of Greater Manchester. Loyalists to Sir Keir Starmer feared that Mr Burnham could have mounted a leadership challenge if he won and became an MP. But the Scottish Secretary, Douglas Alexander, has told LBC the party's ruling body acted in Labour's interest.
Let's have a thought experiment for a minute. Let's consider that the National Executive Committee yesterday decided to greenlight the equivalent of 20 parliamentary by-elections. I think it's a fair judgment to say the coming weeks would have been consumed by a huge amount of coverage about who's up, who's down, who's in, who's out. That, frankly, is not in the interest of the Labour Party, and I would argue the better interests of the country are served in recognising the scale of the choice we've got in 101 days' time in those critical elections.
The Education Secretary has written to headteachers in England saying that all schools should be mobile phone free. Bridget Phillipson says it's not appropriate for phones to be used as calculators or for research during lessons. It's understood that Ofsted will inspect schools on the implementation of their mobile phone policies. The UK and nine other countries are joining forces to provide a new generation of wind farms in the North Sea. For the first time, turbines will provide energy for more than one country using undersea cables. They'll be capable of producing enough power for tens of millions of homes in the UK. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down three at 10,139. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy but largely dry for most to start the day. Heavy rain and strong winds will push into the west later. A high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
That there is a great night's sleep. And when Susan wakes up, she's going to get to enjoy a delicious unlimited breakfast. Or, if that super comfy bed is just too hard to leave, Susan can enjoy a midday checkout. Get better sleep for your money. Book now at Premier Inn. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 4 minutes after 10, and it is hard to know where to start. This might sound a little flippant given the gravity of the situation, but imagine if you were charged with concocting a story or an event that was designed to discover whether or not there was any point at which somebody would detach themselves from a fascist project, from a fascist administration. I mean, if you actually had to come up with the details. Tragically, the murder of Renee Nicole Good was not enough, because I think it was... And remember, we're trying to get into the minds of people who have been sympathetic so far to the fascism. And Renee Nicole Good was married to a woman. I think she had dyed hair. She described herself as a poet. Forgive me for putting it like that. She was a poet. But the fact that she described herself as a poet allowed people to snigger and sneer. And so when she was murdered by a member of ICE, it kind of lent itself to both sidesism in a way that was as tragic as it was predictable. You couldn't watch that footage, of course, and conclude that any threat, any peril whatsoever was motivating the behaviour of the man who murdered her. But you could watch that footage and find just enough to cling on to publicly pretend that you believed that. So you'll remember, we sat here and we said, oh well, the party told you to ignore the evidence of your eyes and ears. It was their final, most terrible command. And we watched it happen in real time. We watched and listened to people pretending that they could not see what we could see, that they could not see what they could see, and that they could somehow cobble together a case for self-defense or provocation or whatever it may be. And there was just enough for the people thus far sympathetic to or warm towards the fascism, the racism, the misogyny, the climate change denial, whichever it was, whatever part of that holy trinity it was that most appealed to somebody who wouldn't come out and describe horrors as horrors. There was just enough for them to pretend, wasn't there? Just enough for them to sort of set. And I'm talking about people right up to the top of the United, up to and including the president of the United States of America. And you need to bear that in mind, because the questions that we're going to ask this morning are not as easy to answer as you might originally think, for the very simple reason that this goes all the way to the very top of the White House. And then you come to the events of this weekend. You come to the murder in cold blood and broad daylight of a man who was doing absolutely nothing wrong, except trying to protect a woman who was being brutalised by ICE agents. And what I meant earlier, when I suggested that you could concoct a story designed to find out whether or not people really would put up with anything, whether people really would look the other way when the worst and most undeniable atrocities were unfolding under their noses, you'd struggle to do better than the case of Alex Pretty, 37-year-old, and an intensive care unit nurse. I know this shouldn't matter, but it does. That's the nature of the species. That's what we do. An intensive care unit nurse who worked specifically and exclusively with military veterans. There are hospitals in the United States of America that are dedicated to veterans. They're VA hospitals, Veterans Affairs. And it is a kind of way that you sidestep the fact that they haven't got an NHS, in that if you have done military service, you kind of get looked after health-wise in ways that other members of the population don't. And that was his job. That was his job. Working in a Veterans Affairs hospital's intensive care unit, providing in some cases end-of-life care to people who had been prepared to make the ultimate sacrifice in the service of the United States of America. They murdered an intensive care nurse who worked exclusively with military veterans and I think some of their dependents in broad daylight, and then they called him a terrorist. I mean, you know, how many times have I said to you in the last month, year, that we have to have a hyperbole alarm in the back of our heads? And you have this normality bias as well. It's a phrase we've used a lot. I think that the academics call it a normalcy bias. But you have this thing in your head that keeps telling you it can't be as bad as it looks, because this is the West, this is the United States, this is the United Kingdom. I include the United Kingdom because so many members of our media and political class have been very warm towards. I think Farage and Badenoch even want an ICE-type project to unfold here. State-sanctioned murderers roaming the streets of Britain looking for people who are a bit too brown. Well, we know there are members of Farage's party who'd love that. She'd probably start with the ones in adverts, stick them on a list and hunt them down. But you have this hyperbole. See, that was hyperbole for now. But nothing hyperbolic about the first bit of this paragraph. The bit about the intensive care unit nurse who worked in a Veterans Affairs hospital and was murdered in broad daylight by US Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers. I don't think that anybody unsheltered or uncamouflaged by status and power can do what they did to Renee Nicole Good and pretend that there are two sides to this story. I really don't. I don't want you to watch the footage, because you will never forget it. But if you have already, you will know that there are no two sides to this story, although you wouldn't know that from looking at much of the coverage, including the BBC's online coverage yesterday, which talked about conflicting accounts. Our job as journalists, if somebody says it's raining, is to stick our head out of the window and see if it gets wet. And if it doesn't, guess what? It's not raining. Conflicting accounts. So for me, one of the first things that struck me was that difference between, and it's just a consequence, I think, of this mad job that I've got. It was the consequence, I think, of this job that made me start thinking about coverage a little bit earlier than a normal person would. Maybe that's not true. Maybe you were immediately outraged by the evidence of murder, followed fast upon by the slander, the libel of terrorist. Of an ICU nurse who dedicated his working life to looking after military veterans. And I don't know what happens next. I don't know. So if you think about the murder of Renee Nicole Good as a massive fracture in the infrastructure of reality, reporting reality, a massive fracture. But not a complete breach. You could still just about intellectually process the people who were pretending to believe that there was a case for her murder, a case for her killing. You could still just about, okay, well, that's, she was in a car. And a car is, you know, a car is a big and heavy thing. She wasn't posing any threat to anybody and she was trying to get away, but you could pretend otherwise, you could claim otherwise. That's a fracture in what I would call the framework of reporting reality. Because they had to report, we had to report, all the people pretending otherwise. And then you come to Alex Pretty. I'm just going to play you something before we carry on. I don't know what question I'm exactly that I am going to ask you yet. But I want first to play you a video that was taken in December of 2024. In the hospital where he works, at the Veterans Affairs facility in Richfield, Minnesota. It's only half a minute. And this is Alex Pretty, described by Donald Trump's administration as a domestic terrorist after their own Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents murdered him in cold blood in broad daylight. This is him reading a final salute for a US veteran called Terrence Lee Randolph, something which I presume he's called upon to do on a relatively regular basis. And this is what I mean when I talk about the story almost being designed to help everybody else discover who is so broken and sick and debased and bigoted that they still won't recognize, or they still won't condemn, because they can't not recognize it now. They still won't condemn what they're watching.
Terrence Lee Randolph, March 30th, 1947, December 10th, 2024. Today we remember that freedom is not free. We have to work at it, nurture it, protect it, and even sacrifice for it. May we never forget and always remember our brothers and sisters who have served so that we may enjoy the gift of freedom. So in this moment, we remember and give thanks for their dedication and selfless service to our nation in the cause of our freedom. In this solemn hour, we render them our honor and our gratitude.
Alex Pretty there reading the final honours, I think is the technical term, for a veteran that he cared for as an ICU nurse. Today we remember that freedom is not free. We have to work at it, even sacrifice for it. I have a statement also from his parents that I'll share with you shortly. And this is the man that they have called a domestic terrorist. This is the man that Christine Noem lied about. Lied about in broad daylight on live television. Blatant and obvious lies. And it's almost like every question I've ever asked you about this descent into fascism is simultaneously redundant and requiring that I ask you again. You can't pretend anymore. Sometimes I think it's worthwhile having a little look at what the Daily Mail is doing, because it is so bent and so morally bankrupt and so disgusting. You just have this absolutely extraordinary inability. That's why I keep mentioning the list of things that sit alongside Donald Trump, although he now obviously deserves a category all of his own, but all the things they've been wrong about, hideously wrong, whether it's Brexit or Boris Johnson or Liz Truss or austerity, they haven't admitted that they've been wrong about any of it, and they, of course, have been massive cheerleaders for Donald Trump, up to and including their star columnist Dick Littlejohn last week, wishing out loud in print that Donald Trump was in charge here, the man whose administration murders nurses and then describes them as terrorists. Yeah, lots of that, please, warts and all. Was he a threat, or was he shot dead after his gun was taken, is the question mark. Was it Q Twain? Do you remember that little craze a few years ago on the internet? Questions to which the answer is no. Q-T-W-A-I-N. You don't ask questions about this. It would be a bit like asking a question about whether or not the sun came up this morning in your town, whether or not, I don't know, actually I will stick with that, whether or not the sun came up, whether or not water quenches your thirst, whether or not hot things burn. Was he a threat? And then someone called Freddie Gray, the deputy editor of The Spectator, who I don't know, and I don't want to speak ill of people I'm not overly familiar with, but if this clown hasn't used the phrase Trump derangement syndrome, then I would be very, very surprised. These brutalized killings will only serve to validate claims Trump is turning the US into a fascist state. Just think about that. It's not these brutalized killings prove that Trump is turning the US into a fascist state, which is what anybody honest and decent or hadn't spent a significant part of the last 12 months or even 10 years pretending that Trump was anything other than monstrous. You don't go for him. You don't go for Trump. You somehow turn it into a piece about those of us who have been describing Trump's fascism for, in many cases, years now, not just 1 year, but from the very start. And if not from the start, then from the January the 6th incited insurrection and the subsequent pardoning of the violent criminals who undertook it. So it's probably, I don't know, we'll find out actually, a consequence of my job. But how should this be covered? I'm not going to criticise newsreaders and news broadcasters. The newspapers are different. They put headlines on things. They're bent. They're corrupt. You don't have to be following events in courtrooms up and down the country over the last few years to get an idea of how these institutions and individuals have behaved in the past. But you don't look at them when you're looking for the truth. These are the people that told you Liz Truss was a genius, that Brexit would be brilliant, that Boris Johnson was a stand-up guy, that Nigel Farage is someone you can trust to clear up the mess he did more than almost anybody else to create. The Daily Mail was shilling for Hitler in the 1930s, and the grandfather of the current owner was corresponding with the top highest Nazi command. But what the heck do the rest of us do? Well, should I mean, I'm not, as you know, a big, big BBC basher. But what should the BBC be doing when there are no conflicting versions of events? There is the truth, and then there is what Trump's administration is saying. They are two completely contradictory phenomena. This is why I started reminding you of Renee Nicole Good, because there was just enough there to sustain the myth, you know? Alex Pretty was carrying a legally held handgun, as lots and lots of Americans do, which he hadn't drawn, which they've lied about. One of the ICE agents removed it, and after it was removed, another ICE agent shot him five times. So, I mean, they tried, and they have tried, but it isn't going to work, because we can all see what happened. There isn't enough room for the liars to manoeuvre. They don't have a sixpence to turn on in the way that they did with Renee Nicole Good. But when you have, and this is why I said to you, you need to keep in the back of your mind the fact that it goes all the way up to Donald Trump, who, if you weren't following events, didn't apologise for maligning every single British member of the military who died in Afghanistan, but did sort of climb back a little bit on those disgusting comments that we spent all of Friday's show examining. And because there's no room to manoeuvre, there's no sixpence to turn on, there's no space for the lies, this is the bigger moment. Do you know how self-indulgent I am sometimes? This one really got me. It really got me, this one. Well, the more I found out about him, the more unable I was to process what I was feeling. Because I don't know what you do. I do that thing. What would you do, man? What would you do if it happened here? What would you do if Cammie Badenoch or Nigel Farage actually had their ICE agents marching through British streets murdering nurses and then lying about them and calling them terrorists? What would you actually do? Because what he did was so brave, so courageous. He wasn't there by accident. He wasn't there to observe. He was there to object. And he knew the risks he was taking. And he died protecting somebody else, protecting a woman. And they murdered him, and they lied about it, and they called him a terrorist. And because it goes all the way to the White House, the media establishment, and I use that as a descriptive term, not as a pejorative term, the media establishment has to report what they're saying. It has to report what they're saying as if it might be valid. We haven't got a system in place, and we're, the same is true here in many ways. How do you deal with a world in which the biggest liars hold the most power? How do you actually do that? How do you deal with that? Because I don't know. I can do this because I am free in the context of the UK media to speak truth to power and to tell you the truth. If I had spent any of the last few years using the phrase Trump derangement syndrome to describe those of us who have been describing and predicting this for years now, I don't know what the hell I would do, to be honest with you. But I probably would have told you to vote for Brexit. I'd have spent years tickling Boris Johnson's toes. I'd have been joking about what a great guy Donald Trump is. And I'll have Nigel Farage on the show next week to give him a haircut. So I probably would be untouched and untroubled by what that would mean. But for the rest of us who care, what do you do when the lies are this egregious? And I don't know. Is it a question about what should journalists do? How should the media report? How should the media report fascism? 0345 6060 973. How should the media respond when the lies go to the very, very top? When the lies are as blatant as this, what should reporters report? 0345 6060 973. When the lies are as blatant as this, what should reporters report? Hit the numbers now, you will get through.
LBC.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to...
Stay out all night! Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, OK, sales targets. Are we hitting...
The dance floor!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2 for 1, you can choose glasses for at least two yous. From £70 with standard single vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
Selling your car can be super simple. If you choose We Buy Any Car instead of a confusing part exchange. Because with We Buy Any Car, you'll have cash in the bank for more bargaining power on your next car. If only they could make getting to that countryside wedding simpler.
Make a U-turn. Make a U-turn.
Oh, no. We Buy Any Car. Selling made simple. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
During the Air France rendezvous, take advantage of great offers. Until the 27th of January, book your flight to Dubai from £399 or Hong Kong from £589, from London Heathrow via Paris, return including tax. And from the 29th of March, you can reach Paris and beyond with our new flights from London Gatwick. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties, mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest, you probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
26 minutes after 10. This is, again, I mean, arguably a bit flippant. But what do you do now? Do you wait until he invades Poland? So it's a sort of historical metaphor. Or do you acknowledge that this is fascism? Pure and simple. In plain sight. Getting worse, not better every single day. And if it is, then what do we do? What's the precedent? I mean, you can report on coup d'etat in far-off countries. You can report on totalitarian regimes like Putin's. But if it's happening in the United States, what should the journalists do, actually? I've talked a lot about what Keir Starmer should do, what politicians should do. But America is careering at 100 kilometres an hour down the path to fascism. In fact, it's there. What on earth should journalists be doing, both here and there, on both sides of the Atlantic? Because I don't know, as you can tell this morning. I don't know. Antwi's in Prague, in the Czech Republic. Antwi, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Thanks for having me. First, I'll be really short. Revolution. There's no other way in the U.S. how to get through this or convince somehow for the Democrats and at least part of the Republicans to pull their heads out of their behinds and start doing something about it. Invoke the 25th, do something about it.
What would that mean? Remember, I have an A-level in American politics, but not all my listeners do, so just remind us what invoking the 25th means.
So, 25th Amendment, if a president is not able or capable of performing his duties because of behavioral issues, so he's mixing up Greenland and Iceland, he's saying that peace...
But that would involve Congress. That would involve Congress, right, where he still has a majority.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I mean, do the Republicans think that everything will go in their hand, that everything will be perfect and fine for their party if they go their way? I already said there are two things. So I'm from Philly. I'm from a city where we don't mess around. Already the Black Panther Party is reestablishing there. is number one, which is crazy to me because...
But do you not think that people like Stephen Miller and I mean, he's clearly got... a brain that functions. I don't know if you can say that about many other members of the... J.D. Vance, Stephen Miller and J.D. Vance would love more violence on the streets. I mean, Trump, yes, if Simon Marx's theory is correct, and it's going to be increasingly hard to argue with, that he doesn't want midterms and he wants to be able to concoct and claim. But then your course of action would give him what he's hoping for.
Listen, but what is happening in Minnesota is actually a preparation for taking away the midterms. There's not going to be any elections because what they're doing in Minnesota is a preparation for what they want to do in all the cities across the U.S.
But that's how fascism works. That's how fascism is. And we always think historically that fascism must have been violently and furiously resisted at every turn. But it's ushered in, mate. It's cheered in. That's the problem. You and I don't know how we sit here being disgusted, being publicly disgusted and publicly outraged, and it's a sincere, authentic reaction, and yours will be much more powerful, or even more powerful than mine, because you're American. But but there are people there who will be falling for the lies, or, and this is the bit that frightens me most and that I haven't got the vocabulary yet to properly analyse, I can process people who are falling for the lies. I can't process the people who actually really love this stuff. And there must be millions of them, man. There must be millions of them.
Why does Trump still have 30% approval rating, or 30 to 40%, I don't know, depending on the polls? Because there's still a part that loves this, that they really want to change the status quo.
We don't know that. This is helpful, man, because it isn't necessarily a question that gets immediately answered this morning, because how many Alex Pretties does it take for that? Because it could happen once, and in the case of Renee Nicole Good, you could just about, if you wanted to, persuade yourself that it wasn't as bad as everybody was saying it was. You can't really do that here. The handgun, which I mean you could describe as concealed, but you need to understand American gun laws to realize why that's really not a big deal, might give some people in this country the chance to pretend that it's not as awful as you and I are describing it as. But Americans aren't, with your history of gun culture, with the role that the National Rifle Association plays in the right to bear arms, there's no earthly way that this is going to stand, because everyone can watch, everyone can see what happens. So what we don't know, if there's 5 of these, 10 of these, 100 of these, do things change? Because if they don't change after one, how confident can you be that they'll change after 100? That's the thing. That's the thing we don't know. It's not a phone-in question. I mean, you can have a crack at it.
I know. Yep.
But you can't answer
really.
It.
I'll leave it to the rest of the audience that will be calling in. One more thing, please.
Of course.
I wanted to call in Friday for what Trump said about NATO.
Yes.
I am half Czech, half American, have both citizenships. I have friends that served in the Czech Army, actually 11,500 deployed into Afghanistan,
wow.
26 wounded, 14 dead. Even the Czech Prime Minister, who is right now in the middle, the Czech Republic is trying to figure out, do we go with the U.S. or do we stay with the European Union, because we have a Euroskepticism,
new
Prime Minister Babiš. Even he called out that this is hideous and that he shouldn't have said this. And
I don't know if it matters. This is the thing that today's show is about so far. I hadn't realized in that interminable introduction. But it is about actually trying to work out what the new rules are. Because all the old rules just got broken. And if you think they were broken before, I'm here. I believe you. And you might be right. But I would say fractured, fatally fractured previously. And then on Saturday, absolutely destroyed. And no one knows how to report that. When all the rules are broken, when everything has been... How do you report it? Let alone respond, which is the question Anthony chose to answer, and which you can answer too. And what do you say about the 30-odd percent of people who still approve of Donald Trump? Are they fascists? 0345-6060-973. Because I'll say it again, fascist regimes do not fight their way to power every time. They are cheered and applauded all the way up the central streets of the capital cities, sometimes. 10:33 is the time. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
The Prime Minister has defended Labour's decision to block Andy Burnham from standing in an upcoming by-election. Sir Keir Starmer says allowing the Greater Manchester Mayor to run for a seat in Westminster would divert resources from party campaigns in May. A US judge is due to hear arguments on whether the Trump administration's immigration crackdown in Minnesota should be stopped. It's led to a second person being shot dead by federal officers. And the Education Secretary has written to head teachers in England saying that all schools should be mobile phone free. Bridget Phillipson says it's not appropriate for phones to be used as calculators or for research during lessons. LBC weather, cloudy but largely dry for most to start the morning. Heavy rain and strong winds will push into the west later, a high of 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates, fly better.
At Lidl, get great deals on award-winning fruit and veg with Pick of the Week. Save up to 35% with cauliflower now just 99p each. And with Lidl Plus, get red grapefruit for only 29p. In store now. Lidl, more to value. Limited offer subject to availability. Selected stores, GB only. Prices correct on 20th of the 1st. 18 plus terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/lptv.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10:36 is the time. The Trump administration is facing pressure to launch a full investigation into the second Minneapolis killing by federal agents in 2 weeks, as one Republican governor says enough is enough. The US president has told the Wall Street Journal that his administration is, quotes, reviewing everything, end quotes, and also indicates he could eventually withdraw agents from the city, but he's given no time frame. Let me tell you what's happening here. And I do this as a student of history, not of politics, and not obviously as an American, but what's happening here is that they are just testing the boundaries. There is no regret in the administration. If there was, they wouldn't have lied about Alex Preti. And there's absolutely no sense of revulsion or horror at what happened. The murder in broad daylight of an ICU nurse who dedicated his working life to looking after military veterans. The president, of course, is a draft dodger. I can tell you that if there is pushback here, if enough Republicans find enough courage, if that's the right word to use, conscience perhaps is better, to make a little bit of a fuss, then there may be a gesture. There may be something that constitutes weak justice. The officers or the officers involved may be cautioned, dismissed. According to some reports, they're already back on duty, which is unheard of in almost any country, certainly in any democracy, when an officer is involved in the killing of a civilian. But that there is not going to be a change of course. They're not going to suddenly go, oh my goodness me, we seem to have turned into fascists. We better have a big change and a bit of a rethink. These things are incremental. These are exercises in boiling frogs. And if the people watching get a little bit jumpy, or if the frog looks like hopping out of the pot, they might temporarily pause. They might temporarily turn it down. But it's been quite clear for some time that this was on the cards, and it's crystal clear now because they murdered a nurse and called him a terrorist. It gets no worse than that. The quality of that corruption is complete. You cannot have a more corrupt moment, partly because of what Alex did for a living, partly because of what he stood for, partly because of what we know about him, and partly because of how he died, but mostly because of how they lied afterwards. The quality of that corruption is complete. The only thing that changes or can change now is the quantity. You cannot have a more corrupt moment, a more fascistic moment than the murder in broad daylight of a nurse who looked after military veterans, followed incredibly quickly by the lie, the slanderous lie that he was a terrorist, and the instruction to the public to ignore the evidence of their eyes and ears. You know I've got a hyperbole alarm, and you know it beeps a lot. But this isn't one of those moments. It's not beeping now. The quality of this corruption is absolutely complete. So I was trying to touch on with Antri, because all that changes now is the quantity. You have 5 murders like this, 10 murders like this, 20 murders like this, 50 murders like this, and I don't know where people's pivot points are. Oh, I can live with one. She was a lesbian, perhaps, might be how these people live with themselves or lie straight in bed at night. Or I can live with another. He was a nurse who looked after military veterans. Can I live with that? Because if you can live with that, you can live with anything. These false patriots, you know, the US equivalent of people who are polluting your local roundabout with tatty flags, these pretend patriots, if they can put up with this, they can put up with anything. And we're still left with the question of what they get in return. They get a validation of their racism, they get a validation of their misogyny, and they get a validation of their climate change denial. There's nothing else on the table. There never has been, and there never will be. But if they can put up with this, they can put up with anything. So what the hell does everybody else do in the meantime? Sarah is on the line from Minneapolis. I apologize for keeping you on hold, Sarah. What would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hey.
I have to collect my thoughts.
Of course, take your time.
I am a teacher of elementary students in Minneapolis. My students are English language learners, and so all of my students are immigrants. My school is 3 blocks away from where Alex Preddy was murdered.
Wow.
I want to say is that I'm here to let people know, because I know you have listeners all around the world, that I'm trying to cut through the lies. Mm. And as soon as this happened on Saturday morning, the reaction was another person's been murdered. And my second reaction is, how are they going to spin this one? Especially after seeing the video with my own eyes of what happened and knowing that they're going to make something up of how it was justified, when in plain sight, there was no justification for murdering that man.
Because they have to, right? They have to lie. I mean, what's the alternative? If they lie about Renee Nicole Good, they have to lie about Alex Preddy, and the next one, and the one after that, and the one after that. They have to lie, and that's the bit that's new, I think, for me at least. Maybe not for you.
Well, and you know, you have to remember that I've also been through George Floyd and the uprising, and that was all lies as well about the situation, and it continues to be lies about that, you know, there's so many people who say that he was not murdered by Derek Chauvin. It was a drug overdose. Sure. So the people in Minneapolis are used to being told lies about what we know because we're here and we live it. And so I just want people to understand that you can't, if you see Kristi Noem or Greg Bovino going up and speaking to people, none of it is true. And that the things that are happening here are going to move on to other places. And I'm telling you, I never in my life imagined that things would be the way they are in a place where I live. That the families that I work with of my students cannot leave their homes. They literally cannot leave their homes. We have teachers and neighbors who have to go pick kids up because the ICE vehicles are roaming around the neighborhood. They're sitting outside apartment buildings where it's known that immigrants live. We have to deliver groceries to them. We had to deliver Christmas presents because the parents can't leave. And so I just want people to be aware that this is the state of Minneapolis right now. And just when you think it's not going to get worse, it probably will. I'm fully expecting that Trump is going to bring in military troops and we will be a police state.
Well, he's talked about the 1807 Insurrection Act, hasn't he, which would entitle him to flood Minneapolis with more force. So those of us who have flirted with the word fascism in recent months and years, I should probably stop flirting now, because this is the claim that because your agents are murdering innocent civilians, you need to respond as if it's an insurrection. I mean, you know, the dispiriting thing is, and you're an English teacher, I mean, not literature, language, but the dispiriting thing is that all the dystopian novels describe this. I mean, this, the playbook, it's not just the history books. I'm going to read you something from The Handmaid's Tale, if I may. That there were marches, of course, a lot of women and some men, but they were smaller than you might have thought. I guess people were scared. And when it was known that the police or the army or whoever they were would open fire almost as soon as any of the marches even started, the marches stopped. A few things were blown up, post offices, subway stations, but you couldn't even be sure who was doing it. It could have been the army to justify the computer searches, and the other ones, the door-to-doors, the door-to-door searches. That's Margaret Atwood in The Handmaid's Tale, which she herself has described as a warning, not as a novel, but a warning, and you're smack in the middle of it. What should, this question feels a bit inadequate now that I'm talking to you, but what should media do in a moment like this? What should proper journalists be doing?
I don't even know, because I mean, to be honest, like on Saturday when this was happening, I turned on our local news and it wasn't cutting it for me. I feel like I mean, even the people who are here locally, like the news readers, they don't live in the city. They live out in the suburbs. Right. They don't know the city. And so nothing quite seems adequate, that I feel like anybody can say anything they want and present anything the way they want to present it. And it's not really true unless you're living it. And I just, you know, wanted to share my perspective of somebody who's living it and get that out.
Thank you. No, I mean, you sound traumatized, but, you know, and that's just somebody who is involved. You're not hiding in your home. You're not.
I have a lot of privilege, you know. I'm a white woman, and I'm a teacher, and to be honest, like, I mean, I don't go many places right now outside of home and work, and the truth is that I have not actually seen any ICE agents myself, but I know that, you know, they're out there. And I mean, I've seen them online on, you know, video and on whatever, but not personally. So I consider myself to be at this point very lucky and very privileged, but that's not the case for most people.
No, of course it isn't. And the point here as well, of course, is that neither Renee Nicole Good nor Alex Pretty were the targets of ICE. They were not migrants, undocumented or otherwise, and there are plenty of people being deported who've got every right to be in the United States of America. That they were simply, in Rene Nicole Good's case, arguably just in the wrong place at the wrong time. In Alex Pretty's case, standing up for what he believed in, what he write, the same principles and values that prompted him to take a job in a veteran affairs hospital working in the intensive care unit. 10:47 is the time. Quite disturbing, Sarah. Thank you, and also important, because I think what is emerging so far this hour is that there isn't a button to press or a book to open that tells you what to do. There are warnings from the past. There are warnings from the canon, from you know, dystopian literature, but there's no manual. What do you do when your president, your democratically elected president, is a fascist and starts killing civilians for the crime of what? Refusing to ignore the evidence of their own eyes and ears. I don't know what the answers to these questions are, but there aren't many more important questions around at the moment.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Keir Starmer would be a much better foreign secretary than prime minister. He has stayed on the right side of constructive negotiation with the president of the United States, and then when it has been necessary to criticise him for his comments around UK involvement in Afghanistan, it's just a slight shame about everything else.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
A southern train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save 1/3 with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve anything.
Sorry, just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for Business. Fee reviewed periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
10:51 is the time. I mean, what do we do? What does the United Kingdom do if the United States is a fascist state? This is a good piece in The Atlantic. I could almost have written it myself, but I obviously wouldn't have been as articulate as Jonathan Rauch. Until recently, I resisted using the F word to describe President Trump. For one thing, there were too many elements of classical fascism that didn't seem to fit. For another, the term has been overused to the point of meaninglessness, especially by left-leaning types who call you a fascist if you oppose abortion or affirmative action. I always think of Rick Mayall in The Young Ones at that point. I think he called a milkman fascist. Everyone was a fascist who disagreed with him. For yet another, the term is hazily defined even by its adherents. From the beginning, fascism has been an incoherent doctrine. And even today, scholars can't agree on its definition. Italy's original version differed from Germany's, which differed from Spain's, which differed from Japan's. And this piece in The Atlantic goes on to explain why now is the time to use it. It is obviously fascism. And that is a crystallizing moment, because you're either for it or against it, or, and I think we always underestimate this constituency when we discuss the big events in history, you're too worried about paying the bills. To be even paying that, oh dear, someone got shot, that seems very bad. But I'm sure that the law officers wouldn't be behaving like criminals or mafiosi. And even if they are, I'm sure that, you know, it's just a one-off. Most people, if the bills are being paid and the job needs doing and da-da-da-da-da, the wheels are turning, tend not to get involved in this stuff. And that's how fascism triumphs, not through civil wars or coup d'etat, but through complacency. In the face of epically corrupt regimes, which are dedicated largely to self-enrichment. These are the lessons of history. And there won't be any climb down here. If there is any response that looks like justice, it will be a holding tactic designed to put everything on ice, if you pardon the pun, until they start again. Donald Trump, I mean, listen, I'm going to say stuff now that may embarrass me, but he doesn't want the midterms. Simon Marks, who will join us at 11:45 today, has explained on several occasions his fears that he will confect insurrection. Having incited a real one, he will confect a fake one to justify the suspension of midterm elections. I mean, at what point does everybody just accept that this is fascism? Pure and simple. They murdered a nurse and they called him a terrorist. The problem is, the other lesson from history is that it doesn't really change in the small moments. It changes in the big moments. You've got to invade Poland for the world to wake up to what you are. But remember, long before Hitler invaded Poland, Winston Churchill was describing who he was, what he would do, and what he stood for in forensic detail. Huge opposition to Churchill during that period, up to and including, of course, Neville Chamberlain, but most importantly, owners of newspapers, like the Daily Mail, senior members of the aristocracy, many, many major establishment figures, supremely comfortable with Nazism. I guess the invasion of Poland kind of made it clear that he had imperial ambitions that would not end at his own borders. But that, of course, didn't put off some of his sympathisers and supporters, even in this country, who kind of wanted Hitler to be in charge. Whether or not they wrote articles for the Daily Mail saying, I'd take Hitler, warts and all, over Winston Churchill, the lawyer, I don't know. We'll have to wait to see what Dick Littlejohn's latest contributions to public discourse are this week, now that the fascism of his hero has become absolutely undeniable and another innocent man, a nurse who looked after military veterans, lies dead on an American street. While they lie about him. Well, Christy Noem says he arrived at the scene to inflict maximum damage on individuals and to kill law enforcement. Only problem with that analysis is that we can all see what happened. Every single one of us. And of course, if you can't see it for yourself, someone can describe it to you. It is clear. Absolutely clear. But I don't know what it means. Moona's in Kilburn. Moona, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I hope you're doing well this morning. Happy Monday.
Thank you.
I'm just going to give you a brief recap of just about me a little bit. I promise it's going to be less than a minute.
I go on forever. I don't know why anyone else feels the need to be brief.
No worries. I'm from London originally, but I moved to Minneapolis when I was 19. I'm now 35. I've actually attended high school there for a year, even was part of the cheerleader and track team. I went to university, graduated with my undergrad. I worked through college. I've been having two jobs, and then also started my career in technology, and finally ended up working for a big 500 Fortune company,
okay.
One of the big companies in Minnesota. So I've lived there for a very long time.
It's home.
I've also come back to London at least once or twice a year. My entire family, my mom, my grandma, everybody lives here. My sisters. So I come home often. So I take that flight back from London to Minneapolis. I've taken it over 20 times. There was a time where there wasn't even a direct flight, only about 10 years ago. So I'm also an immigrant. I'm also Somali. This is not something I was planning to admit. Like Alex, I think had some with the law. I have a misdemeanor, so technically, which I've, you know, did my volunteer work. It's very different. I mean, I'm happy to go into it if you have questions later. But technically, if you was to look at me from Donald's eyes, I'm an immigrant, I'm both Somalian, I'm a criminal. So all of those things are true. But however, everything else I said before is also true. Mm. This year, I've been back to Minneapolis a few times. I've been back and forth from London. I'm currently actually unemployed for the first time in 19 years.
Okay.
So my family just going back and forth from London and Minneapolis. And in September, I decided not to go back for a friend's wedding. Because if you remember, this same thing that's been happening in Minneapolis was happening in California for a very long time over the summer. And the same way the media was covering it in America, they're covering the same way that they covered what happened in California with the ICE raids and those immigrants that were working on the farms and the people and calling them riots in LA and all of that. So this story, which is kind of crazy, like I don't see a lot of people kind of, it's like we've lived through this. It was just in the summer. So I didn't attend my friend's wedding because I didn't want to get, I didn't want anything to happen to me and having people to, you know, choose between the wedding and me or something and like
getting
that.
You out of, so, getting you out of incarceration or wherever it is you would have ended up.
Because it was a real threat.
What people are you seeing now? I mean, what are you seeing now?
I went back in October to volunteer for the mayor's race because, again, very much my community. I live in Minneapolis for the last 19 years. I had two friends.
I know I told you to take all the time, all the time you wanted, but we are going to hit in the news
Wanted to say something.
Okay.
Yep, I just wanted to say something. I'm planning to go back, but this is the first time in 19 years I had to feel like I had to email my lawyer. I am, all my text messages and my friends are saying, don't come back, don't come home, we're so glad that you're not here. When I'm telling them that when they're going to the protest, stay safe, they're like, oh, I'm being safe. There's nothing that being safe means. You could be walking down the street. Alex was helping two people.
Yes.
I've helped people get up when they're slipping from the snow. It's an instant. And your government, they're just not there to help you. They can barely even secure the crime scene. And how am I supposed to go somewhere and feel like I could disappear? People are disappearing.
Yes.
And I don't, like, I grew up in Minnesota. Like, you know, when people ask me where I'm from, I'm from Minnesota or London, I say both. And in fact, I'm terrified to even go. I just don't understand. Like, and I've been terrified for a very long time, but I'm even more terrified now because I'm Somalian.
Of course.
And I'm going to Minneapolis.
And Trump is singling out you people of your ethnicity for the next stage, really, of racist othering. It's specifying the way it was Haitians in the run up to the election. It's Somalis who've come out next on Trump's list of people who he will use to demonize everybody of color and everybody from an ethnic minority, but it puts you at the front end, it puts you at the sharp end. What do you think, and I am already late for the news, so very briefly, what happens next?
I, like I said to all my people that contacted me, I'm going to do what I need to do, which is I'm going to have to face whatever happens to me. And what happens next is the people that haven't spoken out, they have a decision to really make within themselves.
You're right. That is it, which means we can't answer it because we don't know how many of them there will be. I've already quoted Margaret Atwood. That was Tom in Somerset who brought that to my attention. This is Ernest Hemingway, I'm pretty sure. There are many who do not know they are fascists, but will find it out when the time comes. And we're in that time now, aren't we? Is that a question? I want to talk about the Labour Party infighting, the Labour Party civil war, but it feels a little bit ridiculous compared to the descent of the United States into inarguable fascism. Hopefully we'll find a way to do both. I also really like the story about class and the arts, but I can't look away from that. There are many who do not know they are fascists, but will find it out when the time comes. Is that you?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Prime Minister has defended the move to block Andy Burnham from standing in an upcoming by-election. He was stopped on the basis of an expensive race to replace him as Mayor of Greater Manchester. Loyalists to Sir Keir Starmer feared that Mr Burnham could have mounted a leadership challenge if he became an MP. But speaking this morning, Sir Keir said if Mr Burnham was allowed to run, it would divert resources from upcoming campaigns.
Millions of people will be better off if we have the continuation of a Labour government in Wales, and if we're able to win the government in Scotland and retain and win councils across England. The question is, how do we keep our focus there? And if we introduce elections that we don't need to have in Manchester, that would take money from the party, resource, campaigning.
A US judge will hear arguments later on whether the Trump administration's immigration crackdown in Minnesota should be stopped. It's led to a second person being shot dead by federal officers at the weekend. President Trump says he is reviewing everything connected to the killing of Alex Pretti in Minneapolis on Saturday.
An overhaul of policing in England and Wales is due to be outlined by the Home Secretary this afternoon. Under sweeping new plans, forces will be required to respond to emergencies within 20 minutes. Other changes also include the creation of a new national police service like the FBI. Shadow Policing Minister Matt Vickers has told LBC he needs to see the detail.
You can restructure and reform, but unless you're willing to invest in policing, you're not going to get anywhere. We put a record number of police on the street. In the 18 months that Labour have been in power, they've reduced that number by 1,300. You've got police chiefs across the country now concerned about what this year's funding settlement means.
Her teachers in England have been told their schools should be phone-free throughout the entire school day. The Education Secretary has reportedly written to them saying it's not appropriate for schools to be used as calculators or for research. And severe weather warnings for wind and rain have been issued ahead of the expected arrival of Storm Chandra tomorrow. It's the third major storm to hit the UK this month after Goretti and Ingrid. Amber weather warnings are due to come into force for parts of the southwest of England from 5 o'clock this afternoon. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 8 at 10,151. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy but largely dry to end the morning for most. Heavy rain and strong winds will push into the west later. A high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Beat the blues and book the beach with up to £500 off package holidays and up to 25% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Select the dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb, holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATOL protected. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Yeah, 11:05 is the time. And, you know, I think we've kind of earned the right to plough our own furrow, haven't we, over the years on this programme? The listening figures don't lie. But I fully appreciate the fact that most of the UK media today is obsessing about Keir Starmer blocking Andy Burnham's attempt to get back into Parliament via a by-election. And I would like to talk about that. Well, look, I can't be completely honest with you. It would just feel a bit daft to me at the moment. There's a couple of the calls we took in the last hour. I mean, all the calls we took in the last hour were chilling, but a couple were so personal. The United States is our neighbour. I mean, you know, geographically, technically, but culturally and historically, by far our closest neighbour. Speaking about the United Kingdom now, and Ireland, I suppose. Otherwise, you're going to get all pedantic on me. I think they're a fascist state. How could you not want to talk about that? John Bolton told us. It was Trump's national security advisor who found some courage after he left the administration. This is what he said. He listens to Putin. He listens to Xi. He listens to how they talk about governing unburdened by uncooperative legislatures, unconcerned with what the judiciary may do. And he thinks to himself, why can't I do that? This doesn't amount to being a fascist, in my view, or having a theory of how you want to govern. It's just, why can't I have the same fun they have? But if the fun they have is fascism, then what does that make you? And if it's not fascism, what we're seeing now, then what is it? And that's where the Hemingway line kicks in, which happily Jay has given me the full excerpt. And it's the last line that will chill you. Are there not many fascists in your country? It's a dialogue. Well, there are many who do not know they are fascists, but will find it out when the times come, when the time comes. But you cannot destroy them until they rebel? No, Robert Jordan said. We cannot destroy them, but we can educate the people so that they will fear fascism and recognize it as it appears and combat it. Well, now I think we have to recognize it as it appears, but I don't know how you combat it. That was a question I asked in the last hour. I'm going to leave it on the board. This is fascism. How do you combat it? 0345 6060 973. And then the second bit is a bit woolly. What does it mean? If the United States of America is a fascist country, what does that mean? It's not even what should we do, because we don't know, but what does it mean? And I'm going to keep going on about the invasion of Poland. I know it's a little bit odd, but if you think about it, it makes perfect sense. Because sometimes it takes these moments, these big moments, to crystallise what all the little moments meant. So when Hitler invaded Poland, he'd already been embarked upon a campaign of domestic horrors, the likes of which we probably thought we'd never see again. It's not as if he woke up one morning, invaded Poland, and then started persecuting Jewish people, or journalists, or trade unionists, or protesters. The invasion of Poland was the moment that the rest of the world decided that it mattered. And we're not going to see that, despite his comments about Greenland. All right there, a little tweeting, a little chirping of my hyperbole alarm. That little voice inside your head going, come on, mate, it's 2026, we're talking about America. This isn't 1930s Germany. But then you come back to that line from Hemingway. We can educate the people so that they will fear fascism and recognise it as it appears and combat it. What if you can't recognise it as it appears? What if you're surrounded by people, as much of the UK media seems to be, who are telling you to wind your neck in? You've got Trump derangement syndrome. That's not fascistic at all. That's not the direction of traffic, you silly boy. What are you on about? Huh. Yeah, you're overreacting, you're overreacting. Yeah, so what would it be? It'd be like 2020, you're overreacting. 2021, you're overreacting. January the 6th, you're overreacting. Pardoning the insurrectionists, you're overreacting. Killing Rene Nicole Good, you're overreacting. Killing Alex Pretty, all right, you're right, it's fascism. It's not overreacting. And what does it mean? I'm going to read you this from Stuart, because it is of a piece with where I am this morning, but I won't be there every morning, Stuart. He tells us, I couldn't give a monkey's about Burnham or the Beckhams. James is in Camberwell. James, what made you pick up the phone?
Good question around what do we do? I think we as the UK to combat what is like undoubtedly turning into a fascist state. The phrase, first they came for the trade unionists, so I did not speak out, really does come to mind there. I mean, if this was... it is a rogue state, in my view, now. And if it was another country in the world that wasn't a superpower, they'd be sending an expeditionary force to introduce democracy, which, yeah.
I don't know if we would in the current climate, actually, because, you'd need to wait for America to lead the way, wouldn't you?
precisely. I think that the UK, and I think it's actually an opportunity for Starmer to show some actual decisive decision-making, to cut ties as much as you can with the United States and move back to, and I hate to bring up the EU referendum here, but to go back to Europe and to work with our partners, France, Germany, Spain, Italy, and the rest of the European Union to build an economic and defensive, cooperation like we once had.
They still do, remember. I know you know this, but it's sometimes forgotten in our conversations that they've still got it. And in many ways, Mark Carney showed that you didn't need to be in it to recognise the importance of it, or at least of what it represents. And it's much harder for Starmer, people keep telling me, and they're right. I mean, it is much harder for Starmer because of the isolation that has been inflicted upon the country by people he disagreed with politically, by the economic dependencies that we have on the United States of America, by the military cooperation. You know, what happens to Lakenheath? What happens to the military installations? What happens to Trident? I mean, it's an overused phrase, and I say that as the man who invented it, but it would be like trying to get the eggs out of a baked cake, James.
Yeah, it's not going to happen overnight, but... we have far too long been reliant on the US for, especially from a military perspective. You see Germany especially is rearming, and who would have thought that we'd be happy about Germany rearming, during a time of crisis?
And your original point, actually, about what we do when, you know, we decide that other countries need a little bit of Western democracy, we go and bomb them into Western democracy. But your other point is actually quite haunting, because... the short answer is nothing. If America is going fascist, what can we do for them as opposed to for ourselves, to insulate ourselves from it or to, mitigate it? We can have that conversation a lot, and we can use clever phrases like getting the eggs out of a baked cake, and we can talk about Germany rearming. But in terms of our friends and colleagues and family in America, if the country is going fascist, what can we do to help? Nothing.
I think we need to hope that the midterms,
if they go ahead,
but honestly, yeah, nothing's off the table, is there? I mean, the third term, jokingly, oh, I won't run for a third term. The fact that he's even saying that is concerning. I think you just got to try and, it's hard to hurt such a superpower economically, but I think we need to start pulling out investments, and it's probably going to hit us as well. But I think
he'll hit back. Is there a historical precedent here? I mean, I keep talking about Poland. Sudetenland happened before Poland, but it wasn't enough to galvanize opposition across the world. Did we start? Forgive my ignorance, and you might not know either. But did we start pulling investments out of Germany in the early 1930s? Did we start divesting of German investments in 1935, 1936? I don't know. We went to the Olympics in 1936, so we didn't.
Might be the only one I can think of.
Say that again?
Apartheid South Africa, yeah. Where you boycott, and I mean, yeah.
But we went to the Olympics in Berlin in 1936, so it's highly unlikely that we'd sort of started boycotting German goods or anything like that, albeit that the trade flows then weren't what they are now. That's a scary thought. Thank you, James. You know, we watch it in America, cousins, or whatever it is. What can we do to help? I mean, you gave us most of the dystopia. We gave the world 1984. I use "we" very loosely, and a couple of other classics of the genre. But you're looking at A Handmaid's Tale. You're looking at The Hunger Games for younger listeners, and you're looking at America, and you can't really see the difference between the three situations described. And you sort of read them as a Brit, thinking, well, you know, we'd help our mates, wouldn't we? What could we do? Answer, nothing. So what does it mean? What does it mean if, and I use that word very, very lightly, loosely, not sure it's necessary, should probably be now that, but what does it mean if America is fascist? 11:15 is the time.
This is LBC.
It's not easy being a clump stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself. Hi, Clampy, how's it going? Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely. Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve anything.
Sorry. Just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for Business. Fee reviewed periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
My name is Joan Salter and I am a Holocaust survivor.
Join Joan on Holocaust Memorial Day tomorrow at 8 p.m.
We are all lighting candles to remember victims of the Holocaust.
Remember the past, protect the future.
Be the light in the darkness.
Find out more at hmd.org.uk.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
17 minutes after 11. I just returned to that piece in The Atlantic by Jonathan Roach, who essentially writes under the headline, Yes, It's Fascism, and he writes as someone who resisted using that word until very, very recently. Writing a year ago, I argued that Trump's governing regime is a version of patrimonialism in which the state is treated as the personal property and family business of the leader. That is still true, but I also noted then patrimonialism is a style of governing, not a formal ideology or system. It can be layered atop all kinds of organizational structures, including not just national governments, but also urban political machines, such as Tammany Hall, criminal gangs, such as the Mafia, and even religious cults. because its only firm principle is personal loyalty to the boss. It has no specific agenda. Fascism, in contrast, is ideological, aggressive, and at least in its early stages, revolutionary. It seeks to dominate politics, to crush resistance, and to rewrite the social contract. And if you don't think that's happening now in the United States of America, then I've got a bridge I'd like to sell you. Speaking of the United States of America, Margaret Atwood, of course, is Canadian. You can hear a rather splendid interview I did with her for the Full Disclosure series wherever you get your podcast, which should, of course, be from the Global Player or the LBC app. That was one of the ones I did during lockdown. Have I ever told you about how weird those moments were? So I'd be sitting in my house. It was weird enough doing the radio show from a shed with no colleagues at all. I couldn't even see Keith's smiling face. So it wasn't all bad. But doing when I was doing Full Disclosure, which I do on Zoom, on my computer screen, I'd be sitting in our back bedroom in Chiswick, talking to Tim Roth or Margaret Atwood, talking to some of the most seminal cultural figures of our age. And I could hear my kids downstairs watching Peppa Pig. Actually, they're probably a bit old for Peppa Pig, but, what, you know, watching, I don't know what it was they were watching, probably the Hunger Games. It's just surreal. That stuff. And I don't know. They're worth revisiting those interviews, but they are very, what's the word that I want? Very much. I think if you didn't know about lockdown, there are elements of it that feel a little bit weird. 90 minutes after 11. I've got an idiot's corner for you. Thank you, Steve. I'll read that out in a moment. That's, sensational. The United States of America is, increasingly difficult not to describe as fascist. What on earth does that mean? And not just to us in the UK, but to you as an American. To you, what does it mean to you? Because I don't think I'd realised until today that in the context of answering the question of what do we do to help, the answer is nothing. There's nothing we can do. Greenland was a moment, wasn't it? But, you know, about us but without us is how the Czechoslovakian people described the ceding of Sudetenland to Adolf Hitler. It's all there. In fact, Natasha Devon, who wasn't with you this weekend, precisely because she's been away, was in Prague, and it was in a museum there that she saw a little graphic describing what the Munich Agreement, signed on September the 29th, 1938, was, when Hitler acquired Czechoslovakia's borderland fortifications and a large part of its economic base, all without a fight, because we weren't up for it. That's why the Greenland moment for historians of the future, which was the angle I chose to take on that story last week, how are historians of the future going to deal with this? It could be there. It could be in all the books. Mark Carney, Keir Starmer, Emmanuel Macron and others stood up and said, no, you can't have it. They didn't do that in 1938. And you know what happened next? The Munich betrayal, Czechs still call it. But it wasn't enough. And the killing of one nurse on the streets of Minneapolis won't be enough either. The world can't really do anything to stop the direction of traffic in America, so what on earth can Americans do? I don't know the answer to any of these questions, but I know I should shut up for a while and listen to you instead. Toby's in Bristol. Toby, what made you pick up the phone?
Good morning. I think it was your earlier comments about the equivalence to what was happening in Germany, and I've spoken to you before.
I remember, Toby.
First circumstances. Yes. My father was kinder transport.
I remember.
And my grandfather was sent to Theresienstadt in Czechoslovakia, where he was murdered.
Wow.
And I do see the direct parallels between what we're seeing now. If you want, as you say, the Greenland issue is a bit like Sudetenland, but also Venezuela is sort of maybe a more modern version, where we can see him effectively annexing parts of the world that he feels fall within their sphere. The problem we've got is because we've excluded ourselves from the collegiate nature of the EU, we are isolated and weak. And I think at some point, I've said this to quite a message Keir Starmer directly.
Yeah. He's got a lot on his mind this week. He's got a lot on his mind this weekend.
He does. But it's trying to get him to understand how to see that the plates of the world have changed and that our place is back within the EU. I know that's desperately naive and hope, you know, but my parents both served in the army in the Second World War. And my father, who obviously came here as a refugee, state removed Jewish refugee, fought in the British Army in Burma and then in India for separate partitioning. And what they then brought back and what I grew up with was a deep understanding of how Europe had to come together and the passion which they spoke and believed in about the EU project, which they all understood, helped protect us.
I think
that is what is lacking in our understanding of where we have to go. Because as your previous caller said, there is nothing we can do. We can stand by and watch them descending into, and it is fascism. There is no doubt this is what is happening.
I'm inviting doubt, just for the avoidance of doubt. If anybody wants to have a crack at explaining why it isn't, or why we shouldn't be using that word, even if you want to insert a yet into your analysis, then the number is the same one that Toby used, 03456060973. But the problem, Toby, is that, you know, let's grant everything you say as being true. I don't think I'd argue with any of it, but some people would, might. And we have a homogenous, reunited Europe. Can't do anything about what's going on in the United States. We just have to sit until it's played out. I mean, what you're describing is protecting our own interests in the context of America being lost to democracy and decency. There's nothing we can do. I don't know why. Is it because I sort of grew up when the map was all red and I've still got, you know, we've all got images of Winston Churchill in our personal mental furniture, and we can't quite accept that the United Kingdom is largely irrelevant on the world stage now. But as a member of the European Union, we just sit here and say, "Oh, bad luck, America. See you on the other side."
But I think you're right. I mean, I'm a good few years older than you, unfortunately. and my understanding of Europe, I mean, I have followed the European project since we joined in 1992. I'm one of these odd people who actually bothered to find out about it and understood why we benefited. And I think that, as you say, as America disappears into this, you know, blaze of fascism, that at least we have the structures and the coordination and the economic access that being in the EU provides. And as many conversations that you've had and I've listened to and we've spoken about, is the staggering damage that Brexit did to us economically, and that we are therefore tied more strongly to the American economy, and therefore we are hamstrung. Because on one hand, you can have Starmer saying how awful the situation is, but there's nothing he can do, because ultimately, as more and more American companies fall under the sort of Trump's yoke, and we've seen it with the media, where if they don't, I'm going to use a politically incorrect phrase, count out, which I know is not acceptable anymore, but to
him. I didn't know that.
We've seen what happens. They are excluded and they are threatened. And so we are staggeringly weak on that front. And the only way is back in, because ultimately they will do what they want to do. And even when Trump is gone, the damage has been done. It's seeding disruption and damage for decades to come, because all these people that support him are all at the top of the heap now. And even when he goes, they will still be there. This is not a sudden occurrence or a 10-year occurrence. This is a sort of a conservative right nationalistic project that's been going on since probably before Reagan.
And that partly explains some of the numbers that the rest of us are a little bit baffled by and a little bit confused by. So, I mean, you know, this is just a little radio phone-in show on one radio station in one European country, but the idea that there's anything except detachment that constitutes a proper response to the direction of traffic in America is pie in the sky, isn't it? I mean, divestment and detachment is all you can do, and that sends a horrible message to our American family. Well,
we're seeing the divestment by the European countries who are selling off their debt, American debt, and we are second highest, you can correct me if I'm wrong on that, owners of American debt. And
after
at some
Japan,
point they're going to have to,
no, China, after yeah. China.
It's we're in the top three, you know, or what it's, I'm happy to be corrected on that, but it's still a staggeringly large amount. And at some point I think maybe that is the only option we're going to have. And where do we turn? We have to turn to the places next door to us.
For all its problems,
it's as you quite often say, don't let the imperfectly the enemy of the good. And I think we have to reach that point. And enough of the Labour Party MPs who have a massive majority. This is the opportunity where they can express this, and this is the opportunity they can take to get this through and to explain it. And then this is again comes back down to education and how this has been undermined over the last few decades, to allow us to get to the point where these sort of opinions can be spread without any basis in fact, which is what's very readily happened in America, where there is a complete absence of factual context just opinion.
And that was there from the start. And you know, I don't know why more people didn't recognise the peril that they were putting themselves in when we were introduced to phrases like alternative fact. I come back to that. I haven't mentioned it for a long time. Kellyanne Conway describing lies as alternative facts. Donald Trump describing news as fake news. All of those invitations to ignore the evidence of your eyes and ears were embryonic then, and now they're fully fledged. And yet still some people cling to the idea that there is something unhorrifying going on. Which brings us to Idiot's Corner, and a late opening for today. This is from Steve. Have you completely lost the plot, O'Brien? 6 days straight talking about Trump and American politics. Anyone would think you were trying to divert attention away from the hapless Starmer and the growing support for the Reform Party. Well, it's odd that, Steve, because your history of text shows quite a lot of interest in Donald Trump, up to and including a selection of yawning emojis when we were talking about how he insulted every member of the British military that died in Afghanistan last week. So let's play a game then. So which British politician described Donald Trump's hideous denigration of the British war dead as not quite fair? Was it A, the hapless Keir Starmer, Steve? Was it B, the leader of the Green Party, Zach Polanski? Or was it C, your hero, Nigel Farage? Which mealy-mouthed muppet elected to describe that hideous, hideous intervention from Donald Trump as not quite fair? Was it A, Keir Starmer? Was it B, Zach Polanski? Or was it C, the great patriot, the great upholder of British values, Nigel Farage? Yeah, well done, Steve. And do you know what? While we're at it, which British politician had their bills paid at the Davos Economic Summit last week by an Iranian billionaire? Which British politician had all of their bills picked up by an Iranian billionaire who described him as somebody who had been advising them since 2018? So which British politician went to Davos and had their hotel picked up and their passes and access provided by an Iranian billionaire whose company said that he, the mysterious British politician, Steve, that we're worried about talking about, had been an advisor to this Iranian billionaire for the past 8 years. I'll give you a clue, Steve. His initials are NF. It's 11:30 and you're listening to Dominic Ellis. Well, you're listening to James O'Brien, but Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer has defended the decision of Labour's governing body to block Andy Burnham from standing in a parliamentary by-election. The Prime Minister says it would have diverted the party's resources from campaigns for May's elections. President Trump says his administration is reviewing everything connected to the killing of a man in Minneapolis. 37-year-old Alex Preti was shot and killed by federal immigration agents on Saturday. And the Met Office has announced the name of the third storm to hit the UK this month. Chandra is forecast to bring strong winds, heavy rain and snow to large parts of the country tomorrow. LBC weather, cloudy but largely dry to end the morning, but heavy rain and strong winds will push in from the west later, a high of 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
It took me less than 30 seconds to request my repeat prescription on the NHS app.
That's quicker than making this brew.
And I save time by not ringing the GP practice.
Win.
Plus, with notifications turned on, I know as soon as I get a new message.
Big win.
So there's more time for this tea break.
So did you go to that restaurant?
I did. It was so good.
We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Request repeat prescriptions and turn on notifications to never miss a message. Tap the NHS app.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prep for the media business. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Atina, a media business student in year 12.
Being a young creative at Global Academy means that I get to turn my passion into a career. From studying creative enterprise, I've already learnt how to market my own business and gain knowledge about the business side of the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw. It's a very personal draw, so you think of a personal way to spend £1 million.
I would hire a hype man, so everything I do would suddenly be epic.
It's a lucky day, and you win the birthday draw. So...
let's go, Kev. Goat cheese bagel for lunch.
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only. No purchase necessary.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 11:34. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And, of course, the answer to all of those questions that I posed before the news was Nigel Farage. He is the UK politician who attended Davos, a gathering which he has previously been very, very rude about, on a pass sponsored by the family office of an Iranian billionaire. I'd be fascinated to find out why, but don't hold your breath, because we still haven't found out why he's decided no longer to boycott the BBC, or, to the currently solitary member of Idiot's Corner this week, Steve, why he elected to describe Donald Trump's hideous insult to the families, never mind the dead themselves, of every British soldier who died in Afghanistan during a 20-year deployment undertaken at the behest of the Commander-in-Chief of the United States. And Farage this weekend decided to describe it as not quite fair, which I suppose at the very least you'd have to describe as something of an understatement. But thanks for the reminder. We must put these things in front of people like you, Steve, because you certainly won't be hearing about them on GBBs, where I suspect you'd prefer to be tuned. 11:35 is the time. Fascism on the ground in America. Fascism on the march in America. Fascism now, I think, almost inarguably in place in the United States of America. And if I've discovered anything this morning, it's that there's not a great deal that you and I can do about it. I don't know that we've got a big enough following in the States, and also with time differences and what have you, to do what we did sometimes in the aftermath of Brexit, which was dedicate the entire programme on leading Britain's conversation to people who weren't in Britain. But I mean, there'll be plenty of Americans listening. I mean, what does it mean in the great scheme of things? Is post-Brexit Britain such a diluted and denuded power that we will actually have less ability to distance ourselves from fascism than Canada, which has a border with the fascist state, or the European Union, which contains very fascist sympathetic leaders? Are we so diluted and denuded as a world power now that we will be left with little choice but to just sort of hold our noses and go along with everything? I do not know. I don't know anything today. That's the nature of conversations about unprecedented things happening. Happily, I've got a switchboard, although you could be forgiven for not knowing given the amount of words that have come out of my mouth so far this morning. Zach's in Slough. There's three more. Zach, what would you like to say?
Hello, James.
Hello, mate.
I think, yes, America is fascist, but they don't know it.
Yeah.
I have a friend in America, and we speak quite regularly. And I think he thinks that America is the saviour, and the fascism is their path to saving, for example, Iran. They wanted to invade in Iran, and his outlook on it was, we're going there to liberate the Iranian people because protesters are being killed. Oddly, when I pointed out that protesters are being killed in the United States of America, he quite straight away, without thinking about it, he said, oh no, but they were resisting arrest and they had firearms and they are the terrorists.
What does he think they were doing in Iran?
Well, basically, whatever America does is right. Whatever Trump does is gospel.
And nothing will break that spell.
Well, I find it very difficult to get through to him, and I think the reason is because the media in America is has brainwashed him and brainwashed the masses into thinking that they're doing the right thing. Trump is doing the right thing.
Well, not I mean, enough to probably qualify that phrase, the masses, but his approval levels are plummeting, and opposition to this latest debacle, this latest aberration, extends even into the Republican Party and into Republican governors. But we sit here naively thinking that when fascism rises, everybody is opposed to it. And you'd consider your friend to be a decent bloke, Zach, I think. A nice bloke. Otherwise, yes, you wouldn't be friends with him. So we sit here thinking all decent people, all nice people, will furiously resist. They will all be Alex Petty. But of course they won't. Huge, huge, huge numbers of people will not just be ambivalent about it or comfortable with it, they will be actively enthusiastic for it. And that, I think, is the surprise, isn't it?
Yeah, yes, the funny thing is he lived in the UK for many years, and that's how we became friends. And right. Then he moved to... He's actually originally American, but he lived here for like 20 years, and that's how we're friends. And he was a very loving, caring... I would almost class him as a hippie type of person. And then he moved to the United States of America, and since Trump has come in, he's totally changed. It's like I'm talking to a different person.
How amazing. Do we know, yeah. I mean, part of it will be, does he watch Fox News?
Yeah, well, he loves all of those American-sponsored channels, Trump-sponsored channels and stuff. I don't think he has any other alternative news, because sometimes I say things to him which he just didn't even know about.
And that's the point, isn't it? So it's like our friend Steve there, who's also pretty close to a fascist, thinking that, or not being aware that his hero was in Davos on an Iranian billionaire's ticket, or that his hero was essentially letting Donald Trump off the hook for insulting the British war dead. And in fact, I think it's the same party. There's a councillor out there on social media at the moment who's been championing ICE after they murdered Alex Pretty in Minneapolis. No prizes for guessing whose party that councillor belongs to. It's Steve's favourite politician, yeah. Nigel Farage, again. So questions that I might ask you include, why are you still friends? And I think I know the answer, but I'd like to hear you say it.
Well, actually, I've already said to him that I don't think we can be friends anymore, yeah, because of some of the things he's been sending over. But I'm actually keeping in contact with him because he's a great window into the other side for me.
And you're now a window into the window for us. So you know, hang in there. So I remember Michael ringing in last week to talk about his parents, having to cut his parents out of their life because they've gone full racist. And a couple of sympathisers with the racism as opposed to sympathisers with Michael, possibly Steve, actually, the texter earlier, I should check the history, were very cross. That's disgusting that someone would cut their parents out of their life in order to object to their fascism or their profound racism. But that's the point, actually, isn't it? Is that that's what also normalises it. You're right to stay in touch. It's helpful to have a window on it. Yeah, but unless we shut the door in these people's faces, they won't realise how disgusting their behaviour is.
Yeah, but I'm trying to. It's like the old saying: keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Yeah. I mean, he's not my enemy, but his beliefs are totally opposite to what I believe. So I thought this is more educational for me. Sometimes he sends stuff that is so at odds to what I believe that I can't believe that there are people sending this propaganda stuff. But there is, obviously, it's his algorithms. He would actively search things that are denigrating towards, like the UK. He thinks the UK is overrun by Muslims, and
yeah, even though he lived here,
yes, but
and saw no evidence of it when he was living here. But now that he's spending his life on TikTok or Elon Musk's social media platform, he's absolutely convinced. There's a phone in here. We'll probably do it tomorrow, actually. So how do you deal? Because it's a bit like during the pandemic when we were talking about the vaccine deniers, the people who denied science, and it's similar, isn't it? Is that you know you could be married to one, Zach. You should count your blessings.
Oh, you should see the stuff he sends over for vaccine anti-vaccine.
Goes hand in hand, does it?
Yes, absolutely.
That's interesting. I think Farage said something a bit weird about vaccines the other day, so he needs... Thank you. I'm very grateful to Steve for reminding me to bring all this to your attention, because Farage has also been flirting with the anti-vaccine bandwagon. And, of course, he invited someone onto the stage at the Reform UK Party conference who claimed that King Charles had contracted cancer as a consequence of the vaccine. So we have got our own little sort of cheap Poundland version of Trump over here, but at the moment the use of the F word would probably still be inappropriate because you need to have power to enact it. I don't know if this is an inappropriate question, can I just inquire after your kind of background and ethnicity, if that's all right?
Yes, I'm British Asian. My parents are from Pakistan. I'm Muslim.
And does your friend realise that you'd be pulled over if you were in Minneapolis at the moment?
Well, interestingly, I was going to go to the States to watch the World Cup.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to anymore. And I told him the reason why I can't do it is because I don't think I'd fit in anymore in the United States. And I probably would get rejected. My visa might even get rejected, so I'm not even going to bother applying.
I think that'd be interesting to watch the numbers on that. And I don't know what happened in Berlin in 1936, but that World Cup is imminent now, and the descent of... I wonder what the 1936-2026 parallel is. 90 years separating them. There were plenty of people in the United Kingdom in 1936 telling people that they had Hitler derangement syndrome and they needed to wind their neck in and they needed to turn up their hyperbole alarm because they were getting carried away. I don't know. I apologise for not having the history. I've told you before, my A-level was all about Byzantium and Charlemagne, which is not a great deal of use in the current context, but I presume that the parallels are pretty powerful. I just hope Gary Lineker doesn't say anything about them, because then the Daily Mail will have an embolism. It's 11:45. We've got Simon Marks up next, and it's always, of course, a pleasure to hear from Simon, but I think you'd agree with me. Some days it's actually a duty.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
They have fatal incompetence.
Straight to the point.
What is the problem they've got over there?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The country's going backwards. Growth down. Energy prices up.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20 terms at ocado.com.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save 1/3 with off-peak group tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. No medical questions and a cash payout. Search Sunlight cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 11:47 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where I should have mentioned earlier, actually, I've been quoting from the rather excellent piece in The Atlantic by Jonathan Rauch, but Simon Marks has a characteristically acute piece in the I newspaper today as well, where he once again resists the urge to indulge in any I told you so's, but it is fair to say that an awful lot of what you have expressed fear of is now coming to pass. Alex Pretty, and you may disagree with this, actually, but to me it feels different even from Renee Nicole Good, and I don't fully understand why, do you?
Well, I think it does feel a little bit different from Renee Nicole Good, which is not in any way, James, to disparage Nicole Good, because I think it's absolutely evident that she was shot in cold blood by a trigger-happy ICE agent, yes, and that she was, at the time of her killing, posing no particular threat to that ICE agent. But in the case of Alex Pretty, I mean, the distinction is that he was absolutely exercising his entirely legal rights to observe and film the enforcement operations that were being conducted by the Border Patrol. At no point does, in any of the videos, at no point do you see him goading or engaging with those Border Patrol agents. In fact, what they do is approach him and another woman on the streets. They knock the other woman to the ground, and Mr. Pretty, who at this point only has one thing in his hand, and that's a cell phone, puts his other hand up to indicate that he's going to go and render some assistance to this woman who's been thrown to the ground. He is, after all, an intensive care unit nurse. As he is trying to render assistance to her, the Border Patrol descend upon him and the woman. They pepper spray both of them, and then they begin pummeling Mr. Pretty. And, you know, there is no indication whatsoever that he posed any kind of threat to them at all, no indication that any of the mendacious claims made by the Secretary of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, the White House Deputy Chief of Staff, Stephen Miller, you know, that he was a would-be assassin, that he's arrived at the scene to try and kill as many immigration enforcement agents as possible. There is no indication to support any of those claims. He wasn't, as they claim, brandishing his weapon. Mm. In fact, the ICE agents take his weapon off him before they then fire 10 bullets into the Border Patrol agents, I should say. They take his weapon off him before they fire 10 bullets into him. And of course, the other massive difference here is that Alex Pretty was exercising his Second Amendment rights under the American Constitution legally to carry that pistol. Now, we can all discuss why on earth anybody would show up at a protest carrying a loaded gun, and from the distance of London or other European capitals, that obviously looks like very bizarre behaviour. But in the context of Minnesota and in the context of America, where you have the Trump administration going to the mat to defend the Second Amendment rights of Americans to bear arms, well, Mr. Pretty was engaged in his Second Amendment right to bear arms. He was legally permitted to carry that gun. He had done everything right in terms of gun ownership. And that, of course, is one of the reasons why the National Rifle Association posted on social media yesterday saying responsible public voices should be awaiting a full investigation, not making generalizations and demonizing law-abiding citizens, by which they mean Mr. Pretty. He was, at the moment of his killing, as far as all of the video suggests, absolutely a law-abiding citizen.
You talk about the old two countries divided by a foreign language, by a common language thing, which is never truer than with regard to guns. I'm always a little bit wary when this happens. You've just spoken, and while you were speaking, I was thinking, and my thoughts have led me to a place, and I'm going to say it out loud, and you're going to tell me that I'm wrong. If Alex Pretty hadn't been carrying a gun, the reaction of the administration would not be currently looking a little bit like an investigation or a climb down.
Absolutely. Without question. You are absolutely right. And it's one of the reasons, of course, why the killing of Renee Nicole Good did not achieve result in any kind of climb down. I mean, if she'd been legally carrying
insane,
a weapon
Simon.
In her car...
I know you live there. Yes, I know you're used to it, insane. But this is absolutely insane.
But James, to put it into context, I was just looking up the numbers to remind myself. Do you know how many Americans in 2024 tried to take guns through security checkpoints at an American airport? The TSA in 2024 intercepted 6,678 firearms at airport security checkpoints, and 94% of them were loaded. So when Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem starts talking about why would anybody show up at a protest with a gun rather than a sign, well, I don't know, Ms. Noem, but why does anybody show up at an American airport with a loaded gun when they know they're not going to get it through the security checkpoint? Why is the right of Americans to show up at schools with guns, to show up in movie theaters with guns, to show up at football games with guns? Why is that okay, but showing up at a protest with a gun somehow triggers the notion that this man is a would-be assassin? And so what they've really found themselves in difficulty over is the gun ownership with Alex Pretty and Donald Trump's sort of partial rope. Now, of course, the issue is going to be compounded because President Trump's sort of partial climb down last night, and he appeared in an interview with the Wall Street Journal. Not coincidental, a Murdoch newspaper that yesterday accused the US government of lying about what had taken place in Minneapolis. The fact that he last night appeared to be committing to some sort of an investigation suggests that he knows how much difficulty he's in. And you've got to, if you read that interview, it's very brief, it's a 5-minute phone conversation he had with the Wall Street Journal. You've got to wonder if he's preparing to drop some of these officials who have gone way out on a limb in calling Mr. Pretty a would-be assassin. Is he about to pull the rug out from under them?
He may have to. I mean, again, we're in completely uncharted waters in the context of Western democracies. And I'm just sort of zoning in on that observation that you're highlighting and articulating perfectly. From the perspective of pandering to or managing the base, the problem here is not that Alex Pretty was shot dead in cold blood. It's the fact that he was carrying a weapon shortly before he was shot dead in broad daylight. In cold blood. I get it. I just wanted to get that out there because I can't still quite believe these words are emerging. I want to talk to you briefly about another story that's been completely swamped by recent events and probably rightly so, but it's a story that you brought to our attention some time ago. But before we do that, what happens now? The people on the streets of Minneapolis aren't going to be going anywhere in a hurry. Tim Walz has been very impressive in his rejection. Well, here's a question for you. Why, when Kristi Noem moots the possibility of removing agents from the streets of Minneapolis, is she asking for election records and the electoral register in return?
Absolutely extraordinary. And the answer, of course, is that the federal government is demanding the Trump administration that every single American state hands its electoral registers over to the White House, because the White House says it wants to examine those electoral registers and make sure that everybody on them is properly on those electoral rolls. Now, this is coming from a Republican Party that allegedly believes in states' rights. And remember, we don't have one election in the United States. We have 50 of them. They're all organized by each individual state. Many Republican states have dutifully handed those electoral registers over. The Democrats, of course, are fighting the request in court. But the reason why they want to get their hands on it, many critics of the administration contend, is because once you've got the electoral register, you've got the power. You've got the power to disrupt elections, to challenge the outcome of elections by saying, well, you know, Mr. Gonzalez from Acacia Avenue in Houston, Texas, I mean, we need to see proof that he is an American citizen and he has a right to vote.
Wow.
So this is all part of preparations for massive jiggery-pokery in November.
Great use of the phrase jiggery-pokery, and thank you for making me smile during such dark times. You were the first, I think, certainly on this programme, to moot the possibility of there being no midterms. What are the odds on that now, in your view?
Well, you know, whether the midterms take place or not, I think is almost not the central question. I think the question is, will midterm elections take place in a time-honoured, free and fair fashion? And that, I think, is much more unlikely now than the likelihood of the prospect of the midterms themselves being cancelled. I think that jiggery-pokery, you know, they are lining it up. They are already beginning it. We've seen the gerrymandering, the redistricting that's taking place in so many states in a bid to try and game the outcome of it. But you certainly can't rule out anything happening depending on the state of the streets in this country by the time we get to, you know, September, October.
And you will be steering us through that, no doubt, as well. To take us back to something else that you explained to us at the time, and that is the removal, essentially, from the streets of the United States. I'm harking back to a fonder era now, Simon, when people were just being scooped off the streets without any apparent reason, rather than shot dead. But I refer to Rumeysa Ozturk, the student who seemed to have been taken into custody by ICE officials for doing little more than writing an op-ed in support of the Palestinian cause in the Middle East. This story has developed a bit after the unsealing of documents, I think.
Yes, and to be clear, she was seized off the streets for writing an opinion piece that was critical of Israel and that was calling on her university, Tufts, to engage in divestment from Israel. And, you know, it was very clear at the time that for the Trump administration, criticism of Israel, any outward support, not just, of course, for Hamas, but outward support for the Palestinian cause, was generally placing students in jeopardy. Now we know, thanks to the release of some of these court documents through partly the reporting as well of Mother Jones magazine, that the government was engaged in a coordinated effort to scour one particular website, but others as well, that were gathering information that was sort of crowdsourced from people who were contributing information and saying, you need to look at this article that this woman's written for the student newspaper at Tufts. You need to look at the words that this protester used at a particular university. I mean, this is how the government was focused on particular students and others that it decided to pursue in what it maintains was a campaign to protect free speech in the United States, but absolutely crack down on what they claimed falsely were terrorist sympathizers in many cases on the campuses of American universities. And as I think you and I said at the time, you know, much of this started on social media. Some of these students found themselves being arrested, having their visas revoked, simply because a crowdfunded effort to at Secretary of State Marco Rubio or at Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem on X and other social media platforms drew the government's attention when the numbers of people doing that were sufficient. But now we know it was an even more organized effort using some of these more obscure websites that themselves were serving as clearing houses, essentially for people who wanted to bring information to the government's attention.
And indeed see anybody criticising Israel arrested and essentially abducted, I think is probably a reasonable word to use in this context. All parts, it's increasingly difficult to resist the conclusion that these are all parts of the same pattern. Simon Marks, thank you. I have a sneaking suspicion we'll speak again this week, but in the meantime, thanks for getting up early. 1 minute after 12 is the time. You know, speaking of online propaganda, I've got an extraordinary story for you in the next hour, which involves a TikTok account that was dedicated to persuading people that new properties in this country in London in particular, were being handed over to asylum seekers and refugees and immigrants with no opportunity for anybody else to live there. Like an extraordinary account dedicated entirely to doing that. And a journalist who doesn't work for the Daily Mail has gone to the trouble of looking into this and trying to work out what was actually going on, because it was so obviously untrue. Of course, that doesn't stop millions of people on social media believing it. And Nigel Farage's candidate for London mayor is a big, big believer in all of the online lies about the city that she seeks to be mayor of. Lady Haw-Haw, or Lady Ha-Ha, I think we shall call her moving forward. But the reality of this story, even a grizzled old git like me was slightly taken aback by how utterly, utterly nuts it is. We'll find out more about that in the course of the next hour. But we will probably be turning our attention in the main to domestic politics. And by that, I mean Andy Burnham and Keir Starmer, not what should British politicians be doing about Donald Trump and America's descent, breakneck descent into fascism.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Sir Keir Starmer has defended the decision of Labour's governing body to block Andy Burnham from standing in a parliamentary by-election. The Prime Minister says it would have diverted the party's resources from campaigns for May's elections. Sir Keir's responded to suggestions from some Labour MPs that he's running scared of a potential leadership challenge.
The rule that we introduced in relation to these situations was introduced by the Labour Party 2 years ago. If you already hold a post, then you need permission to fight, let's say, a parliamentary election. That's nothing to do with this set of circumstances. Andy Burnham's doing a really great job.
President Trump says his administration is reviewing everything connected to the killing of a man in Minneapolis. 37-year-old Alex Pretty was shot and killed by federal immigration agents on Saturday. An overhaul of policing in England and Wales is due to be outlined by the Home Secretary this afternoon. Under the plans, forces will be required to respond to emergencies within 20 minutes. Other changes also include the creation of a new national police service like the FBI. Policing Minister Sarah Jones has told LBC the changes will improve public safety.
There are two challenges. The first is that everyday crime is going up, so whether that's phone theft, retail crime, antisocial behaviour. The second challenge is that crime is, in many cases, more sophisticated, more national and international indeed. So these reforms, which we've worked on for a long time and with policing, will fix those challenges.
The Education Secretary has written to head teachers in England saying that all schools should be mobile phone free. Bridget Phillipson said it's not appropriate for phones to be used as calculators or for research during lessons. Ofsted will also start to inspect schools on the implementation of their mobile phone policies. And the Met Office has announced the name of the third storm to hit the UK this month. Chandra is forecast to bring strong winds, heavy rain and snow to large parts of the country tomorrow. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 5 at 10,148. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy but largely dry to start the afternoon, but heavy rain and strong winds will push into the west later, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Do you know, it's draining doing the big stuff. I don't know why, and we won't do a phone-in about it today, but I don't know why Alex Pretty's murder. I don't live in Minneapolis. I don't live in the United States of America. I'm unlikely ever to go there in the foreseeable future. So I don't know why some events anywhere in the world the case of the Iranian young woman murdered for wearing her headscarf wrong. So sometimes they just hit you so hard, don't they? They just hit you so much harder than other horrible things happen everywhere every day. But some things break through your armor of psychological self-protection, and some things don't. So I don't know why. But when I hit the 12 o'clock hour after 2 hours of quite heavy lifting, I'm tempted always to take the path of least resistance. And do you know the question that popped into my mind just then during the news bulletin? I mean, it might be a bit childish, but this is where my brain is, all right? So if I'm inauthentic with you, you can tell. You might not be able to say, gosh, James is being a bit inauthentic today. But some days when the news agenda doesn't lend itself to our pontifications and ponderings, I have to talk about things I'm not that interested in. This is not one of those days. But when it is one of those days, you can tell. You can actually tell. However hard I try, however loud I shout, however lyrical I wax, you can tell. An inauthentic... If I can fake that, I'll be finished in this. But I'll be complete. I'll be the finished article if I can learn how to fake that and pretend that I care about things that I don't really care about. I care about this because I care about my country, and who leads my country is a matter of profound importance. I don't want to see the United Kingdom go in the way of the United States, which is what would happen, I think, in the event of Nigel Farage becoming Prime Minister, and potentially, perhaps, given some of her comments in these spaces, if Kemi Badenoch were to become Prime Minister. So I find myself caring about Keir Starmer's position and performance. But I don't have a very clever question for you this hour, right? Here's what happened at the weekend, if you weren't aware of it. Andy Burnham announced his desire to give up his dream job as Mayor of Manchester, into which he was voted merely 2 years ago, and seek instead to become a Member of Parliament again, a Labour MP once more. Almost certainly, I don't know if anyone's going to argue with this, as a precursor to launching some sort of leadership bid against Keir Starmer. Because otherwise, why did he run for Mayor of Manchester 2 years ago? If he'd rather be an MP, why did he run for Mayor of Manchester 2 years ago? So these are the facts. He announced his intention to seek to become an MP, which would involve giving up the mayoralty. And it's very hard to frame any account of why he would do that that doesn't include the possibility, the desire, the likelihood, the probability of launching some sort of leadership challenge to Keir Starmer, whose position both in the country and in the party, the Parliamentary Labour Party, as well as the broader coalition of the National Labour Party, is currently fragile, to say the least. And then the National Executive Committee, and I told you on Friday that this was going to happen, but newspapers have to fill pages. The National Executive Committee voted 8-1 against allowing Andy Burnham to become a candidate. The official argument is that allowing him to stand down as mayor would have prompted another election, which might have seen reform get in as mayor of Manchester. They also said it would have risked a return to the psychodrama that dominated the end of the Conservative Party's 14 years in power. This is a direct reference to the possibility of a leadership challenge. I think one BBC, very prominent Sunday morning BBC presenter, elected to describe Labour's local difficulties as a car crash, which to the best of my knowledge is not a phrase that she ever used to describe the revolving door of leadership and leadership challenges and the rest of it that the Conservative Party was subject to not that long ago. So anyway, here's Keir Starmer talking about it a little bit earlier today.
Andy Burnham's doing a great job as the Mayor of Manchester, but having an election for the Mayor of Manchester when it's not necessary would divert our resources away from the elections that we must have and that we must fight and win. And resources, whether that's money or people, need to be focused on the elections that we must have, not elections that we don't have to have. And that was the basis of the NEC decision. The rule that we introduced in relation to
these situations was introduced by the Labour Party 2 years ago. We introduced a rule which said that if you already hold a post, an elected post, then you need permission to fight, let's say, a parliamentary election. That's nothing to do with this set of circumstances. Andy Burnham's doing a really great job.
I mean, come on, man. There's no earthly way that this decision not to let him run for a by-election, not to let him run for a parliamentary seat, is not motivated by the ultimate plan to become the first of the leadership challengers. But here's what I've got for you. There's two things. I mean, we can do the how do you think it's been handled. Keir Starmer has a choice here between a rock and a hard place, OK? The rock is rejecting the application, telling Andy Burnham to sling his hook. The hard place is accepting the application and watching either Andy Burnham lose a by-election in Manchester, which would be disastrous. And remember, you've got the Greens on the march now as well across the country, and opinion polls are never more accurately reflected in actual ballots than they are in midterm by-elections. Or Andy Burnham wins. I got that wrong, didn't I? It's a rock, a hard place, and a cliff face. He's caught between a rock, a hard place, and a cliff face. So the rock is that he decides to tell Andy Burnham he can't have a cracker at this constituency, and he'll deal with all the flack caused by that, and the perception and accusations of weakness. The second is that they have a by-election and they lose it, and Starmer's toast because his authority begins, and that could still happen, of course. No, it couldn't. That's the one thing that's been taken off the table. And then the third one is that he lets Andy Burnham run. He becomes an MP. They could still lose the by-election in that context. So you've got the cliff face and the rock. Should I change my analogy here? Do you think that the three different ways of saying rock is unhelpful? If he'd been allowed to run, he could have lost. And then they'll have a mayoral election in Manchester as well. So that's the fourth dimension. That's the brick wall. So Keir Starmer is caught between a rock, a hard place, a cliff face, and a brick wall. And he's chosen the rock. Because if he chose the cliff face, he could have hit the brick wall as well. And if he chose the brick wall, he could have fallen off the cliff. And if he did it, you see what I mean? It's fairly complicated. So it's a four-way. It's a bit like that. No, it's nothing like that. Rubbish tip in Star Wars where the walls start closing in. So it's a four option challenge, of which the first option, and you know, I think it has to have been the right thing to do, doesn't it? Even if it makes him look weak. This is the phone in 03456060973. It's the perfect distillation of that phrase we use a lot, and indeed Toby in Bristol reminded us of how often we use it, of letting the perfect be the enemy of the good. So once Andy Burnham announced that he wanted to run for this constituency in Manchester, Gorton and Denton, once he announced that, Keir Starmer was going to have a bad day. There is no scenario in which Keir Starmer emerges from this better than he went into it. It's a nightmare for him. It's a disaster. The self-styled King of the North has got designs upon the leadership, albeit, and no one really seems to have mentioned the fact that his last tilt at the leadership was an absolute embarrassment for everybody concerned. But hey-ho, it's no point having a mind if you never change it. So from the minute he announced his intention to apply to stand in Gorton and Denton, Keir Starmer had a loss. He had a net negative. He had a minus. He had a problem, right? Given the options he had, I put it to you that he did the only thing, he did the only vaguely sensible thing that he could do. So, you know, cue the front pages. Crush and Burnham, blocking Andy, ignites a Labour civil war. Labour faces, and that's in The Sun, The Guardian. It's very rare that The Guardian and The Sun have almost identical front pages when it comes to a domestic political story. Labour faces risk of party civil war after PM blocks Burnham's return. Labour war as Starmer blocks Burnham bid to be MP. You may have got the impression that there's a bit of a war on in the Labour Party. It's always interesting at times like this to see what the Daily Mirror has done, but I don't seem to have brought it into the studio with me today. And the Daily Mail goes for lame duck Starmer has only hastened his demise, while the Daily Mirror strong Starm tactics. So you've got the only really popular left-leaning newspaper, The Mirror, describing it as strong Starm tactics. Labour was plunged into open warfare last night after Prime Minister Keir Starmer torpedoed Andy Burnham's Commons comeback. And every other front page is more or less in agreement. The Mirror is not even flying in the opposite direction. It agrees there's civil war on the cards. And I agree with that as well. I mean, the left of the party, for want of a better description, will be up in arms. The Labour Party is world class when it comes to self-immolation and self-sabotage. There's barely a political party in history that's better at tearing itself to shreds over details than the Labour Party, the Labour movement, you could argue. And Keir Starmer looks incredibly weak. This is not a defence of Keir Starmer as a leader or as a man. This is a defence of what he has done in these circumstances. So the producer's written on the screen that another Tory has defected to reform. I'm going to suggest to you, are they a sitting MP at the moment? Or did they stay in at the last election? I'm going to suggest to you that you will be able to guess. I'm not even going to do a multiple choice. So another Tory has defected to Farage's outfit. And if I said to you, it is the single most obvious defection from sitting MPs, who would you respond and say? I just do it as a text. Don't try not to look at the news. We haven't got a bulletin coming up. I'll come back after the break and tell you who it actually is. But if you had to pick somebody who is incredibly vile about immigrants, has the brains of a biscuit, and routinely soils themselves with opinions that are very, very, very Farage adjacent, which sitting Tory MP would you reach? I'm going to give you another one as well. Somebody who was in several very, very senior positions with direct responsibility for precisely the policies that Nigel Farage never stops moaning about. So if you had to hire someone from the Tory party whose fingerprints were all over all of the things you spend your life moaning about, everything from refugee policy right through to hotels, repurposed hotels for asylum seekers with a little side order of, oh, well, you can't really be British if you weren't this, that or the other, or you can't really be English if you're British. If you had to pick the single best candidate for all of those things, which one would you pick? It's not Marc Francois, and I think that Jonathan Gullis has already gone, hasn't he? So you can't have him either, and he's not even an MP. So if I give you one more clue, I'm just going to see what happens to my inbox. No, you're getting there. There you go. So in many ways, it's a choice between two people, especially the bit where I say they have had very senior roles in delivering precisely the problems. I should go to the break, shouldn't I, and stop playing? Or should I tell them who it is? I can't come back after the break and do it. Can I come back after the break and do it? No? All right. It's John Major. It's not John Major, it's Suella Braverman.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
It's not easy being a clamp stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy. How's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
You know that guy I've been seeing?
Yeah.
Turns out my sister's been seeing him too.
Oh, really?
And I heard he's been seeing Kelly at number 56. And Dave.
Your brother?
Yep.
Specsavers opticians and audiologists own and run their stores, so your care is their business, which can make them rather popular.
I've got something to tell you. I've got half an hour with him this afternoon.
Specsavers, your care is our business. Book an appointment today.
It's time to scale up that fishmonger business, Anne. With free day-to-day online banking from Virgin Money, you'll be a big fish in no time. Now that's a real catch of the day. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now.
UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and Isle of Man. 18 plus fees apply for chaps and international payments. Terms and exclusions apply. Backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name of Clydesdale Bank PLC.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
I think I should probably apologise to Sir John Major there, because as Dennis points out, despite that immediate retraction, if I were John Major, I'd sue you for defamation, James. It was just a joke. Of course, John Major hasn't defected to Reform. You have to pick someone who is not very bright, incredibly hypocritical, somehow curiously dedicated to denigrating and maligning immigrants, even though her parents were immigrants, and also heavily responsible for all of the policies and political decisions that delivered much of the mess that the country currently finds itself in. In fact, I wonder whether there's a correlation to be drawn between the people that have defected to Nigel Farage's outfit from the Tories, who actually did, or, I mean, because Jenrick, I thought, would take some beating, having been an actual immigration minister, and then to join Farage so he can say, nothing to do with me, I was just an immigration minister in the last government. Sweda Braverman was actually Home Secretary. And then, of course, she had to... I get confused now. I get them a little bit mixed up with each other, the Jenricks and the Bravermans and the rest of them. I can't remember. I thought that Suella Braverman's husband had quit Reform because they were so rude about his wife. Anyway, there's a new tradition in place now, and that is you can be first in the queue if you want. You have to find and send them to me on Blue Sky, because I can't see things if you send them to the studio. Can you find the examples of Braverman being very rude about Farage, or Farage being very rude about Braverman? Because they'll be out there. They always are. The scale of the hypocrisy of these characters is absolutely visible from space. But if you're quick, you could be first. You could be the ones to do the online social media, what's it called, archaeology, and you will have the time that Suella Braverman said Nigel Farage is a big smelly poo-poo, or the time that Nigel Farage said Suella Braverman smells like Marmite. I don't know what it was that they said about each other, but they did say something, I'm certain of it, and you could be the first to find it. We're supposed to be having a phone-in about Keir Starmer and the question of whether or not he could have handled the threat from Andy Burnham any better, albeit that what he's done is awful. It's the least awful of the four options that he could have set in motion. Essentially, the two options being, do you block him from running or do you let him run? A little bit more on this latest, if you care, really. Should we do the other tradition? So have we got all those clips that we have to play out every time a Tory defects to the Reform outfit? We've got a little selection of clips. Have we got them? I'll do that after we hear from Peter in St Albans on the question of Keir Starmer blocking Burnham. What do we think, Peter?
Well, I am profoundly shocked by this. And I'll tell you why. Because the latest polling, which electoral calculus have given us, is that Labour are at 17%, which is one of the lowest ever recorded Labour percentage. I think since they're saying in their report, electoral calculus, since 1910. So it's an extremely serious
situation. I didn't think the Labour Party existed in 1910.
If I could just expand about why Andy... I think, and we know...
Oh, hang on, just to check, and I'm not going to stop you from making your case. This isn't about, has Keir Starmer done the right thing from Keir Starmer's point of view? This is about why you want a leadership challenge and you think Andy Burnham should be the next leader. is it? Am I right?
I think...
Yeah, okay, you can just say yes. It's not a trick question. Yeah, I just want to be clarifying.
In a sense, I think they're trying to block him because they know he's a future leader.
Yeah.
But I wanted to just explain why I think this is a historical point. I think this is a dangerous historical point for the Labour movement, because I think what they're doing is they're about to reject a very good politician who's sharp, smart, appealing to working class voters, is called the King of the North, and he's not called the King of the North for no reason. And with Labour at this dreadful polling, he is the man, I believe, who could challenge Best.
Do you remember what happened last time he ran for leader?
Sorry?
Do you remember what happened last time he ran for leader?
Well, we were overpowered by all that Corbynism and...
I meant him specifically. And he was a bit rubbish, I think, probably by his own account. He's been on Full Disclosure. In fact, most of these, most of the players in this have been on Full. So I'm a little bit surprised. So, I mean, A, you phoned the wrong show, because there's, and that's fine, because, you know, you can't have it both ways if you're me. I have to let you come on and say these things, because A, they're interesting, and B, they're authentic and sincere. But it's not what we're talking about. I gave you the options that Keir Starmer had. And shutting down a possible leadership challenge is a clever thing to do if you want to stay as leader, Peter. So you're agreeing that he's done the right thing from his own point of view?
From his point of view, but yes. Not from the greater Labour movement.
Well, no, not from your point of view about the greater Labour movement. So I think a change of leader might be a good thing. That doesn't mean that it should be Andy Burnham.
Well,
he's a bit of a drama queen, isn't he? Or king?
What I'm trying to say is that he's their Ghani figure, I believe.
And if I just voted for him to be mayor 2 years ago,
he said it's
the best job in the world.
I agree, James, I agree. But politics is not a nice gentleman's game, is it? There comes a historic point when the Labour movement has to say, can we go on like this? And the voting is just so dire.
Voting, it's polling. But, I mean, and there will be votes in the event of a by-election. And how do you think Labour would perform in that by-election if it had gone ahead, given their 17% polling at the moment being the lowest since 1910?
I think in the Greater Manchester area, clearly he is a very popular figure and has demonstrated his skills.
And the mayoral election that he wouldn't be in? What if the enemies of the Labour Party got in as mayor of Manchester? That would be on you, wouldn't it?
Sorry, I missed that point again.
There'd be a mayoral election and Burnham wouldn't be in it. And if Labour lost that would be what, in the context of what's good and what's bad for the Labour movement, the broader Labour movement, as you call it?
Possible, but I think that area would not. That would be a bit like London choosing reform, I think.
No, according to the polling, which is what you began your contribution by citing.
Oh, dear. I'm just trying to make a point.
Okay. Do that again. Let's do that. No, listen, I don't think you're wrong necessarily. I don't think this is a phoning about whether or not Andy Burnham would be a better leader. It's about whether or not Starmer has done the right thing. But the events have been rather overtaken by Suella Braverman's desperate attempt to get back to the front line of politics. I think it was her husband. I've double-checked. I think her husband quit the party after Zia Yusuf said hideous things about her. But remember, none of that matters in the context of, self-advancement and self-promotion. We'll catch up with Natasha after the news bulletin on yet another defection to the reform from the lunatic fringe of the Tory party. I'm almost beginning to chalk this up as a great week for Kemi Badenoch. I mean, it's almost as if she made a list of the MPs she'd most like to get rid of. Genuine question this. If Kemi Badenoch made a list of the MPs she'd most like to get rid of, who do you think would be on it? And if we put Robert Jenrick and Suella Braverman at the top of it, who'd be third? Because it'll probably be them next Monday. In the meantime, on the subject of whether or not this defection will trigger a by-election, here is something that I'll play it to you after the headlines with Amelia Cox.
Former Conservative Home Secretary Suella Braverman has defected to Reform UK. She's told an assembly in central London that Britain is indeed broken. Andy Burnham has called on Labour MPs to work together to help win the Gorton and Denton by-election. The Mayor of Greater Manchester has been speaking to LBC following a decision by the party's governing body to block him from standing. A US judge is due to hear arguments on whether the Trump administration's immigration crackdown in Minnesota should be stopped. It's led to a second person being shot dead by federal officers. LBC weather, it'll be cloudy with heavy rain pushing into western and southern areas this afternoon, a high of 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
You stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top, you know, I couldn't fault it.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
The day keeps dragging. You can't concentrate, and there's that nagging feeling that you just want to step outside and vape. Don't let nicotine cravings ruin your focus. Nicorette Invisipatch provides effective relief from nicotine cravings for up to 16 hours. Make 2026 the year you quit and enjoy freedom from smoking and vaping with help from Nicorette. Quitting made real. Nicorette Invisipatch contains nicotine. Stop smoking or stop nicotine vaping aid. Requires willpower. Always read the label.
Yeah, I'm one of their biggest fans. I've got all the vinyl. First saw them at a tiny little place in Camden. Then as festival headliners a few years back. Oh, now that was special. So there's no chance I'd miss their world tour. In London, Lisbon and LA. Good thing I've been saving.
From down the road to across the globe, saving gets you there. Join the millions of people already saving with NSNI. Visit nsni.com.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom, Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafe.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It's 12:33. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Where, is it 40? 40 more defections and Ed Davey will be leader of the opposition. Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, is here with the least shocking news of the year so far.
Yes, James, when I heard you say there was another defection just a few minutes ago, and you'll never guess who it is, I thought it's got to be her, right? Mm. It's got to be Suella Braverman. This has been somebody, obviously the former Conservative Home Secretary, that people have been tipping to go to the Reform Party for even longer than Robert Jenrick. She is probably more to the right than he is. And obviously, we've been hearing from her this morning. She has been speaking at an event which Nigel Farage was at, speaking about help for veterans. I think we can hear a little bit of what she had to say just a few moments ago.
Thank you, Nigel, for that wonderful introduction. I feel like I've come home. Say what an honour it is to be with all of you. Gallant, noble, brave servicemen and women. You've put your country first. You've sacrificed. You've given us everything. And from the bottom of my heart, I want to say thank you. Thank you for everything you've done for the United Kingdom.
She's also been warning today against managed decline. She's been saying that immigration, she feels, is out of control, public services on their knees, people don't feel safe. But like we say, and like we've been saying, every single major Tory defection, you know, is this, you know, turning Reform into just a party of, you know, former Tory MPs? When does that line get crossed? Nigel Farage has been saying for the last couple of weeks that he's not going to let anyone else into the Reform Party after May the 7th. Are we about to see a flood of Conservative MPs, former Conservative MPs, making that jump before that deadline, James?
And well, as I say, 40 more, and Davey's leader of the opposition. But, I mean, two thoughts. Neither of us are in the room, but one wonders quite how the servicemen and women gathered respond to the fact that Nigel Farage was, of all British political figures, by far the most pathetic in response to Donald Trump's hideous comments about those members of the military personnel who lost their lives in Afghanistan. And indeed, he hasn't apologised for that, and he continues to malign the memory of Danish soldiers, French soldiers, soldiers from anywhere else in the NATO coalition. But also, who do they think was in charge for the 14 years prior to Keir Starmer becoming Prime Minister? Because Jenrick was merely an immigration minister. These people are animated almost exclusively by immigration, and Suella Braverman was Home Secretary.
This is exactly the kind of person that I don't think people who are supporting the Reform Party want in the Reform Party at all. You're exactly right. She embodies everything that they didn't like about the last Conservative government. She was the Home Secretary. She failed to get a grip on immigration. She failed to get a grip on what many people in the Conservative Party called the small boats crisis. And she is absolutely the person that they want nowhere near somebody who you know, like Nigel Farage, who says that they want to change Britain and step up and be radically different and radically reform. I cannot see how many reform MPs currently, and obviously this makes her Reform's eighth MP, adding to their sort of collection, if you will. But there must be some people in Reform, and I have spoken to some who are genuinely worried about how far they go from being the establishment, sorry, the anti-establishment party, to becoming the establishment party. And I do think that that moment with someone like Suella Braverman, you'd like to say, you could argue that you've just done. Robert Jenrick was only an immigration minister. He was also housing secretary. He was a key part of that last Conservative government. So was Suella Braverman. Why are you now voting for this party that's turning yourself into just an old party?
Specifically said they didn't want her as well. They said they wouldn't take Liz Truss or Suella Braverman because they were too toxic.
It just goes you to show, can you trust Nigel Farage's word as much as you can trust Donald Trump's? I think I know the answer to that one.
And her husband left the party after Zia Yusuf said mean things about her?
Yeah, that's right. And that also, you know, started off this swirl of speculation. Yeah, it's just good, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't predict it. It's just like a trolley going either way, this way or that way. But absolutely, that was exactly why this sort of set of leadership speculation was set off by the fact that Suella Braverman's husband had joined the Reform Party in the first place. She said she wasn't going to do it. She's now jumped ship.
Who's next then? Go on, put a few pence on it.
Oh, that's a good question. Well, we were being told, I think it was the week before last, by Nigel Farage, that there was a big Labour defector coming. I wonder where that's
That
gone.
Was last Tuesday. We must have missed it.
We must have missed it. I know. It must have been that tumbleweed that
I did hear some names in that column. I'll tell you in private, because I don't want to embarrass or indeed libel anybody, but a couple of the names that I heard as possibles in that front were very, very surprising. Farage, part of this, presumably the military angle, is designed to distract and deflect from the fact that he was so pathetic in his response to Donald Trump's hideous comments about military veterans as recently as Friday.
Yeah, and his response to the Greenland issue by basically saying, well, it actually, you know, it would be a safer world if America did have control of Greenland. Absolutely the opposite of what we've been seeing, James, from every single other party leader in Britain who has swung in behind Keir Starmer in his attempts to try to basically stand up for Britain, stand up for Greenland's and Denmark's interests. Nigel Farage has absolutely not been doing that.
Thank you. I had a visitor from one of our most committed listeners on Friday, who said hello outside the studio. He was very taken with your trainers.
My trainers?
Yes, he saw you on Friday as well, Stephen and Milton Keynes, who routinely sends me jokes via text that I steal. Lovely bloke, nice to put
a face. I think I was wearing my running trainers then.
Oh, is that what it was? There you go,
Stephen. They are very nice and trendy. I'll make sure to wear them again.
Yeah, you see, in Milton Keynes, they'd be fashionable. Thank you, Natasha. It's 12:39, you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. A lot of you are wondering whether or not there'll be a by-election. Well, let's ask Nigel, shall we? Let's ask the man himself.
When I was leader of UKIP, back in 2013 and 14, I had several Conservative members of the Parliament who wanted to defect and sit as UKIP. I said to all of them, the only acceptable way you can do that is to resign your seat and hold a by-election. And two of them, Douglas Carswell and Mark Reckless, did exactly that and indeed went on to win the by-elections. For the others, I said, it's no go, it's not right, it is dishonourable. And this really is the dishonourable member for Bury South, Christian Wakeford. It is a complete insult to voters for MPs to have the arrogance to think that it's them they voted for, when the truth is most of us vote for or against the main party leaders. And it amazed me that Boris Johnson, in response, didn't even ask for the man to put himself forward for a by-election. You see, the truth, folks, is they're nearly all, not all, but nearly all, career politicians, you, the voters, are just useful to them once every few years. It's all about them.
Oh, do we listen to that again? That's obviously not from today. That's from millions and millions, sorry, 3 years ago. Nigel Farage explaining why it's absolutely the case that anybody defecting from one main party to his party, whatever it's called this week, would have to be subject to a by-election, would have to have a by-election. And not to do that is, to use his own words, dishonourable. Career down with career politicians, says a man who, apart from a brief foray as a fairly rubbish commodities trader, has been a career politician. So I don't know whether he is rubbish or not. All I know is that the last company he was involved with received a winding up order from Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs over unpaid taxes. But he's made up for that since with all of the gold bullion deals and the cameo recordings that he does and the 17 streams of income that he failed to declare to the House of Commons officers. It was discovered last week. But so you should, by rights, have now three by-elections on the way. One from Honest Bob Jenrick's constituency, one from Suella Braverman's constituency, and one in Danny Kruger's constituency. I think we will actually listen to them. Oh, hang on a minute. Apparently he's rung in. Okay, well, you never know how these conversations are going to go, but Nigel Farage, welcome to the programme.
My message to you is clear, plain and simple. Never trust a Tory. Did you get that? I'll repeat it. Never trust a Tory. They will always let you down. They will always betray you.
Speaking of trust and betrayal, there was this bloke just 3 years ago who explained what should happen when people defect from the Tory party to his party. Do you think we could trust him? Or is he somebody that will always betray you?
When I was leader of UKIP, back in 2013 and 14, I had several Conservative members of the Parliament who wanted to defect and sit as UKIP. I said to all of them, the only acceptable way you can do that is to resign your seat and hold a by-election. And two of them, Douglas Carswell and Mark Reckless, did exactly that and indeed went on to win the by-elections. For the others, I said, it's no go, it's not right, it is dishonourable. And this really is the dishonourable member for Bury South, Christian Wakeford. It is a complete insult to voters for MPs to have the arrogance to think that it's them they voted for, when the truth is most of us vote for or against the main party leaders. And it amazed me that Boris Johnson, in response, didn't even ask for the man to put himself forward for a by-election. You see, the truth, folks, is they're nearly all, not all, but nearly all, career politicians. You, the voters, are just useful to them once every few years. It's all about them.
It's no go. It's not right. It's a complete insult to voters. It's Reform UK policy. And before you go, Nigel, any word on all of those former school friends queuing up to accuse you of hideous racism and anti-Semitism?
Bernard Manning.
Thank you very much. Fiona is in Beaconsfield. To steer us back to the question of whether or not the Prime Minister could have handled Andy Burnham's desire to get back into the House of Commons any better, given that whatever he did was going to be disastrous, was this the least disastrous course that he could have taken? Fiona.
I don't think it is. I want to stick to your question because I heard you talk to the gentleman before me and say that he didn't.
Well, he didn't, did he? I'm not. Don't make me sound like a meanie. He didn't. No, it's a question about could Keir Starmer have handled it any better from Keir Starmer's point of view. And there you go. That's the question.
I know, but you've now thrown me with clips of both Suella Braverman and Nigel Farage. Well, so I've got to get my blood pressure.
No, hang on a minute. It's time you pull yourself together, for goodness sake.
Bernard Manning.
Carry on.
So I don't think he made the right decision by blocking him, because I think, as you say, he was in an invidious position. I feel sorry for him in a way. I'm an ex-member of the Labour Party. I left because of all of these shenanigans. Mm. It's been a very trying 5 years of my life. But anyway, going back to Starmer and Burnham, everyone knew within the Labour Party that Burnham was going to do this at some point, and it was just a question of when. So they will have had a long time to have worked out what their response was going to be. So I'm not sure that I would agree that Andy Burnham did an honourable thing by applying, but I think that once he did apply, that Starmer they should have allowed him to run, because I think that he's still as weak by not allowing him to run as he is by allowing him to run. But we may now lose an important by-election in an important constituency, and I'm worried how this all leads to your first 2 hours of your programme, which were the right hours to concentrate on, where we're heading down a road to us gifting this country to reform, and where that ends up.
I've got all my rocks. I've got my rocks, my hard places, my cliff faces, and my brick walls mixed up. Because of course there will be a by-election now that Labour could lose.
Yep.
And if that happens, Starmer, any defence of Starmer today as having sort of recognised that we shouldn't let the perfect be the enemy of the good falls apart.
Yep. And he could stand as an independent. Some people are asking, Andy. You don't think so?
No, absolutely not.
There you go.
That was fairly unequivocal. He probably will now.
Well, I don't know either. I don't know him well enough. But what I do know is from my short time and trying to be a candidate myself, is that what we are doing at the moment is not cutting through with the public. It's just not cutting through. And I've seen both Starmer speak many times, including with my 20-year-old son, and I've seen Burnham speak. And Burnham is the communicator, just like Angela Rayner was as well.
Well, that's the other thing, isn't it?
He wouldn't have something that he doesn't have, unfortunately.
He wouldn't have an untrammelled passage to power, Burnham. If he triggered any form of leadership challenge, there'd be plenty of other hats arriving in the ring.
Of course. Of course,
shortly afterwards.
But Shabana, Wes, they're all going to put their
big risk
their
then, because you've got this by-election coming up, and, well, that by-election will be coming up, of course. There won't be any by-elections in the constituencies where Tories have defected to Reform, despite the leader of Reform describing not having by-elections as being a no-go. It's not right. It's a complete insult to voters. So there it is. Thank you, Fiona. Up next, and it's been a little bit delayed by Suella Braverman's latest attempt to get back into the limelight. It's amazing how they all keep saying that Britain is broken. How they broke Britain by some idiot is a really good book, actually, if you want to understand the mess that we're currently in. But all of these people who are now offering up the narrative that Britain is broken, broke it. You can tell that because they either get a chapter or several pages in the actual text of How They Broke Britain by Ryan. Available in all good bookshops as we speak. Of course, the subtext of How They Broke Britain is that it's quite easy to fix what's being damaged, and you fix it by stopping the love affair with the far right, recognising that immigration is not the biggest issue facing this country, and for the massive majority of cases, it isn't a negative, it's actually a positive. Stopping the cult of personality that surrounds the most successful and plausible liars in the country, and removing the stranglehold that right-wing media and secretly funded lobby groups masquerading as think tanks have upon much of public discourse. If you want to fix Britain, that's what you've got to do first. Or, of course, you could carry on smashing your head against a brick wall in the hope that something different would happen next time compared to what happened last time, Liz Truss, and the time before that, Boris Johnson, and the time before that, Brexit, and the time before that, austerity. It's 12:48.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Suella Braverman defects to Reform as Keir Starmer says we're in the battle of our times. Has the Prime Minister really saved his skin, blocking Andy Burnham? And is the killing of Alex Pretty Trump's worst mistake yet?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Lidl, get great deals on award-winning fruit and veg with Pick of the Week. Save up to 35% with cauliflower now just 99p each. And with Lidl Plus, get red grapefruit for only 29p. In store now. Lidl, more to value. Limited offer subject to availability. Selected stores, GB only. Prices correct on 20th of the 1st. 18 plus terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day, so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
The Thames Link train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters, like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Okay, do emails. Burnt toast. And now I've got to sort my repeat prescription.
Or just tap the NHS app.
The one I've already got?
Yep, you can check test results, view your GP health record, and request repeat prescriptions anytime, anywhere.
All while the kettle's boiling?
Before it boils. And turning on notifications means you'll know the moment you get a new message. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Never miss a message. Request repeat prescriptions and more when you tap the NHS app.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
You're really building that business, Josh. That's because you chose to bank with Virgin Money, earning cash back on your supplies, turning expenses into rewards on everything from Sanders to skip hire. He came, he soared, he conquered. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now. UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and Isle of Man. 18 plus. Terms and exclusions apply. Cashback rate of 0.25% backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name of Clydesdale Bank PLC.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
12:51 is the time. I spend a lot of time slagging off all the corruption and hideous bias in the UK media. So I am delighted when I have good news for you. I shared with you some time ago my enthusiasm for London Centric, a new platform set up by the journalist Jim Waterson, which powers from strength to strength, picking up awards like they're going out of fashion. And it was a report from London Centric this weekend that I thought we had to bring to your attention at the first opportunity, because it speaks to a few of the things that we care about. One, of course, is the corrupting power of social media and the way in which dishonesty and lies and propaganda goes almost entirely unchecked. Two is the fact that this can be quite a lucrative income stream for some people. And three is this growing narrative about London, where I've lived since I was 19, being in some sort of terminal decline, a claim so completely at odds with observable reality that it is still a little bit surprising that it's gained such a toehold, until you realise the effort being put in to perpetrating those lies and the fact that it's only got a toehold among people that don't live here or never visit, and Reform UK's candidate for mayor. That's about it, I think. There's very few people who live here or who regularly visit that recognise the portrayal of our capital. Jim Waterson is the editor of London Centric. And I'll just let you tell the story, if that's all right, Jim. What made your antennae twitch with regard to these films on TikTok and what you discovered when you started digging into them?
Well, this wonderful investigative reporter, Catherine Denkinson, brought this in to me, and she had identified an account on TikTok that was offering property tours of people's homes. It's a standard online format, look around this house, except it had a very dark twist. Over each one, it said that this newly refurbished house had just been handed to asylum seekers or to people straight off the boats from the Channel, that en-suites had been installed and that people were being given the keys and saying that they hated Britain as they received it. And these were getting hundreds of thousands of views. The comments were filling up with people going, my son can't get a place to live, which is a very real problem. That, you know, people saying, I'm fuming that this is being handed over to those people and I haven't got any of it. And it was just lies. But it took us months of work to prove that. And this is really the problem. These accounts can spread wild claims, wind up people and spread hate. And it took us months of work to track down who connected all of them. And it turned out that all of them had been let out by the same estate agency.
And there is footage in many of these films of keys being inserted into locks before the front door opens. So, I mean, it's full-on access, unfettered access to most of the properties, which no doubt prompted you to pay a visit to the estate agency concerned.
Yeah, though it took us weeks to work out where the properties were.
How did you do that? I mean, without giving away any trades.
No, absolutely. We pioneered a new investigative technique called bin identification. Using the bins outside of each of the properties in the TikToks, the person had tried to hide their identity, but we cross-referenced the council bin colours with the front door numbers and then manually went along all the streets.
Seriously?
And sent reporters to do it.
Wow.
And that's how Catherine managed to find the breakthrough.
Have you alerted Bellingcat and Elliot Higgins to this new journalistic tactic?
I mean, this is a lot of work. We like to put a lot of work into our stories rather than just accept what things are on face value. But when we went to the estate agent, they accepted that within an hour they'd managed to get the account deleted. They say, well, look, it wasn't us. It's someone we know who mysteriously had access to all of these properties. But the bigger story here is that someone was getting access to dozens of properties across London, filming people's houses secretly, filming people's homes, and uploading them with lies that they were being handed over to asylum seekers and illegal immigrants, and getting hundreds and hundreds of thousands of clicks. And with the best will in the world, with the publicity we're getting here from doing this story, with the stuff that I've published on London Centric, there's never going to be as many people reading our debunk of it to say that this is all lies. And all over the place we're seeing this now. You can just start a TikTok account, you can spread all this hate, and almost no comeuppance when it turns out to be rubbish.
And it has the requisite sort of music in the background, the background music and the portentous voiceovers announcing that another property has been handed to asylum seekers. I had two brief thoughts. The first is, of course, that if this were true and widespread, they wouldn't need to lie about it. And the second is that the rules and regulations that are in place would make it a legal impossibility anyway for anybody who's currently having an asylum application process to be handed any form of property of the type that's on show here. Money? Is it? I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because I think there are quite a lot of racists on social media, particularly since Elon Musk bought X, who may not actually be racist. They've just realised, and some of the investigations have shown this to be true, there's a lot of money to be made from telling racist lies on social media.
When we confronted the estate agent who was letting out all these properties, the person who managed to get it deleted very quickly, who won't tell us the individual running it but says that they know them, they did speculate that one of the motivations might be, well, you can make money from filming these clips. And that's the case, that when you're scrolling through that thing, when you're flicking through Instagram Reels or TikTok, getting angered by something, that if you watch for long enough, that will then send money to the creator that's making it. And this is the sort of model that we're doing. Our journalism, which is, you know, really, really painstaking, will never make as much money as someone who just sends out a load of clips to anger you.
Although, hopefully, we can throw a few new subscribers your way. If you head towards London-centric, you can find out how you can subscribe to this brilliant new resource. We approach Smart Letter States for comment ourselves, obviously, in addition to what you have done. Smart Letter States, they told us, is not connected with the TikTok account, which was recently drawn to our attention. Following our investigation, we were able to identify the individual who we believed was responsible for the filming. We spoke with the individual, and the account was immediately removed. The agency has cut all ties with the individual involved, and we are prepared to speak to the authorities should they be interested in speaking with us. Do we have any idea how much cash you can make doing this sort of thing?
I mean, if we do, weirdly, from some of the MPs' declarations, we can see someone like Nigel Farage or Rupert Lowe is making thousands and thousands of pounds on Twitter. If you're a TikTok creator that's flying, this could be a really nice income for someone. And around the world, there's farms of sort of actual humans creating rage bait content to wind up people about the state of London, about the state of the UK, because it makes proper money. Because this is what people watch. This is what grabs your attention. Everything is basically okay in a city, doesn't do clicks. Everything is going to pieces and its societal collapse does.
Great work. We should probably add in conclusion that the username on the account that's now been deleted nodded to Reform UK. Indeed, that was the username, although there's nothing to suggest that there was any association between them and the political party. The algorithm would presumably act upon that, and people drawn towards Reform UK were the target audience for people drawn towards these kind of racist propaganda lies on social media. But I can say that. You couldn't possibly comment.
That's very much your supposition.
Jim Waterson, thank you very much from London. So what are you on next? What's up next?
We'll be sticking on this story. We've got lots of strange scams and scandals coming up in the next few weeks, though.
And you could do a lot worse than subscribe to London Centric today. That is it from me for today. If you missed any of it, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date on all the top stories and opinions, put your news categories in the order you want. You can even pause and rewind live radio. Can you believe that, Jim? You can pause and rewind. You can listen to a range of...
This is
the future. Including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from my LBC show every day. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Sorbrick with you at 4. But now, it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Or you can listen to me live. The choice is yours.
Indeed you can. And you can rewind Sheila and listen to her again.
You can rewind me later as well. Has Donald Trump made his biggest mistake yet, sending in, cheerleading and excusing the ICE killers of Alex Pretty? Remember what he said about shooting someone on Fifth Avenue? Keir Starmer gives a functional reason for blocking Andy Burnham. Too expensive, he says. Did he, in fact, just wield brute power to save his own skin? He also said, the battle of our times. We're in the battle of our times between patriotic Labour and divisive Reform. That was him just a couple of hours ago. Enter Suella Braverman, defecting from the Tories to Reform. Can you feel the tectonic plates shifting underneath our politics? I can. Let's talk. Andrew Marr's going to join me in a moment.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From
1 Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. The former Conservative Home Secretary, Suella Braverman, has defected to Reform UK. She's told a rally in central London that she is calling out the Tories for their lies.
I'm calling time. I'm calling time on Tory betrayal. I'm calling time on Tory lies. I'm calling time on a party that keeps making promises with zero intention of keeping them.
She becomes the third sitting Tory MP to join the party this month, alongside Robert Jenrick and Andrew Rosendale. The Prime Minister has defended a decision by Labour's governing body to block Andy Burnham from standing in a parliamentary by-election. Sir Keir Starmer says it would have diverted the party's resources from the May's elections. It follows suggestions from Labour MPs that he's running scared of a potential leadership challenge. Speaking to LBC, the Mayor of Greater Manchester wouldn't be drawn on the decision by the NEC, but had this message for backbenchers.
Come up to Manchester. There's a by-election about to happen. We need your help. The Greater Manchester Way is built on togetherness. You know, we don't ever here have a politics that's about pitting people one from another. This is a place that is succeeding because of its commitment to people of all backgrounds working together.
A US judge will hear arguments on whether the Trump administration's immigration crackdown in Minnesota should be stopped. It's led to a second person being shot dead by federal officers. President Trump says he's reviewing everything connected to the killing of Alex Pretty in Minneapolis on Saturday. Actress Sadie Frost has become emotional in court, asking for a break half an hour into her evidence against the Daily Mail's publishers. She claims she knew 100% her phone had been hacked. Associated Newspapers denies unlawful information gathering. And severe weather warnings for wind and rain have been issued ahead of the expected arrival of Storm Chandra tomorrow. It is the third major storm to hit the UK this month after Goretti and Ingrid. Amber weather warnings are due to come into force for parts of the southwest of England from 5 o'clock this afternoon. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 20 points at 10,164. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy with heavy rain pushing into western and southern areas this afternoon, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
I'm back in Charlie Bigham's kitchen. What's on the menu?
My ultimate lasagna, made with a wonderfully rich ragu, slow-cooked for at least 2 hours, layered 5 times with fresh pasta, and finished with creamy bechamel and mature cheddar.
Ooh, I like what I'm hearing.
And I haven't even got to the sneaky layer of bechamel in the middle yet. Cheers.
The only thing I like more than a delicious lasagna is one that I didn't have to make. You're not free tomorrow, are you?
I think I've got plans.
Charlie Bigham's.
Handmade in my kitchen. Cooked in yours.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you. There are two ways, I suppose, to look at the announcement 10, 15 minutes ago that the former Conservative Home Secretary, Suella Braverman, has defected to Reform UK. From Keir Starmer's point of view, there are two ways. I should have been specific. One, it might just take some of the heat off him in relation to the Andy Burnham story, something we'll talk about in much more detail a little later on as well. But the other way of looking at it is it just turns up the heat on the strength of Reform against Keir Starmer's Labour government at the moment. But you can, I think, you can certainly feel the tectonic plates of our politics shifting with each senior defection, such as this one. I wonder how you see it. It was interesting that Keir Starmer, once he said the reason for blocking Andy Burnham was as much financial as political, too expensive, we need the money for our May campaign. And he then went straight to the argument that we in the nation, they politically, are having what he called the battle of their lives between what he said was patriotic Labour and divisive Reform. Now, arguably, one of the most divisive figures in the last few years in our politics has been Suella Braverman, arguably. So where does this leave that fight, that battle of our lives? 0345 6060973, the number to call. You can text 84850. I think the Burnham story and the position it puts Keir Starmer in whatever he decided over the weekend is all wrapped up in what we've just heard announced by Suella Braverman as well, because it's all about his strength, the government's strength, Labour's strength in the face of the juggernaut that is reform at the moment. Henry Riley, LBC's reporter, was at the press conference in which this was announced. We'll hear from Andrew Marr in just a second. So, Henry, tell us what you were expecting and then what happened.
Well, good afternoon, Sheila. I'm currently still at the event. You can smell bacon sandwiches and beer wafting through this hall, because it was an event called Veterans for Reform, where they're launching this new part of their party, specifically looking at policies with regards veterans. It was extremely busy. It wasn't a press conference. It was a rally, and so there were 300 to 400 people here, mostly veterans, again, as I say, having a beer as early as 10, which was the time I arrived. And really, we heard an awful lot about veterans policy until Nigel Farage came to the stage. Once he had spoken about that, then came a rather unexpected announcement.
Somebody who's reached high office in the cabinet, reaching up to the rank of Home Secretary, but was there during those years and saw the betrayal of both our current and our former military, and now has the courage of her... There's a clue. And now has the courage of her convictions to come and stand with me on a reform platform and speak to you today, because it's about time, isn't it? It's about time the establishment owned up to what they got wrong. She was witness to much of us. Ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome to the stage former Home Secretary Suella Braverman.
But there was no actual mention of the D word at that point, defection. There was a standing ovation for Suella Braverman, the former two-time Home Secretary. She served under Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak, of course, Attorney General under Boris Johnson. She was chair of the ERG, the European Research Group. She's been around Tory politics for a long time. And to that standing ovation, which lasted various minutes, she said this.
I believe that a better Britain is possible. And because I believe that is possible, today, I'm announcing that I resign the Conservative whip.
A member of the Conservative Party for 30 years, she told supporters that Britain was broken. She is suffering. She's not well. She described immigration as out of control, public services on their knees, and that the public do not feel safe. And crucially, with regards to her old party, said that she feels betrayed.
I'm calling time on Tory betrayal. I'm calling time on Tory lies. I'm calling time on a party that keeps making promises with zero intention of keeping them.
All of the Reform UK MPs were here. Suella Braverman is now their eighth MP. She said, I feel like I've come home. But of course, Sheila, those accusations of Tory 2.0, we're still waiting for a much-trailed defection from the Labour Party, we understand, of a former MP. Another Conservative joining today, but clearly a lot of political heft being a former Home Secretary.
Thank you very much, Henry. Henry Riley, LBC's reporter. Andrew Marr was listening to that, presenter of Tonight with Andrew Marr on LBC. Hi, Andrew.
Hello, Sheila. I was very excited by the bacon sandwich reference, but I don't yet have the scratch and sniff version of LBC, sadly.
You could almost smell it just imagining it. I think it's because he's been on that trip.